Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another evening of Full Spectrum Radio. I'm your host, Matt, and with me is the epic, awesome, amazing Dennis. What's going on, buddy? How are you doing?
Well, I'm not sure that dude that you just described, but I'm just Dennis. I'm doing good, brother. I'm good.
And what in the hell is up with your phone again cutting out?
I think it's you, dude. It's got to be you.
I don't know.
It was working just fine before the show. Correct?
You know what? Maybe in your Chicagoland weather update, maybe it's the 14-degree weather I was walking around in shortly ago that my ear isn't properly functioning because it's freezing off my head.
You don't need them anyway. They just get in the way.
Dude, your phone's annoying. Your phone's annoying.
All right. Other line, stand by.
All right. So anyway, Dennis is trying to figure out his phone issues. I hope that everybody had a great week. Actually, last couple weeks, I know I was away. Only did about a 35-minute. Short last week, and that was actually on location from Tokyo Bay, my favorite sushi place in the world. That wasn't a fundraiser for it's Forever, Furever Animal Rescue, and they kind of take the worst of the worst and rehabilitate them and bring them up to the adoptable dogs for families, for just, you know, pretty much everything that, and not just dogs, they do cats and all that stuff too, but they're kind of the Caesar Milan of the Chicago area, so I gotta give them hats off on that one. That's definitely a great foundation. They do great work. Everybody that's involved with it, I ended up meeting with them, and hanging out with them and talking with them, and that was phenomenal. It's just, of all of the charity events that I've done recently and fundraising events that I've done recently, I can't even tell you the amount of great, just down-to-earth, actual, true, wholehearted, caring people that I've met. I know I talked about it for a short on the last show, and Dennis, you kind of poked fun at me at this one, and so did a few other people with pictures I posted online. But I did St. Baldrick's.
I would not poke fun at you, Q-Ball. Don't even blame me. I mean, Matt, don't even blame me for that. Hey, at least this one with Forever Rescue, you didn't have to, you know, go bald. The more hair you had, the better you fit in.
True, but my dog is really pissed at me because I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to shave him, but I kind of did, and I'm kidding.
Well, that's all right.
I got confused, you know, with all the shaving. And my cousin, Dean Demolaris, did a fundraiser. I'll post the information shortly, but kind of along the same lines, I just didn't have enough hair to go and do that one, too. So he has a salon in Aurora, Illinois, and they ended up doing a great, great fundraiser, which was downtown and along the same lines as St. Baldrick's. And he had an amazing turnout, too, and I wish I could have made it. But prior obligations, a.k.a. work, ended up holding me back from that. But and also, I didn't have any hair to donate. And
I was going to say, what were you going to shave? Never mind. Do not answer that one. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to wipe your mind clean right now. Get rid of the images that that one may have invoked.
Family show, sir. Family show.
So, does this phone sound better?
It's a little bit better. And it could be my phone. Who the hell knows? So, I do want to give a quick shout-out to Jason Gates, Brian Kano, the whole crew of Haunted Collector. Jesslyn. They have, yes, Jesslyn, Amy, Chris, John. They have their new episode airing tonight, so hopefully it's great, which I'm sure it will be. I talked to Jesslyn earlier today, and she said this whole season was crazier than any, not just season that they've done, investigative places that they've done. So hats off to the guys at Haunted Collector. Hope they have a amazing, amazing one. And after their stuff calms down, hope that we can talk with them soon. So I talked to Brian, I talked to Jason. Yeah, and Jesslyn, you know, they're all excited to be able to share with us and everybody listening who and what they have encountered in this past season, and may be able to weasel out a little spoiler alerts from them. So
yeah, well, I can't wait to get them back on the program. It was a blast last time. But,
oh, yeah.
I also want to give a shout-out to the man that invented the DVR. Thank you, because that's how I'll be watching. As soon as we get done, you can guarantee yourself I'm sitting in there in front of the big screen, and I'm going to be watching. So,
yes.
Thank you, Mr. DVR inventor.
Which, I have to give you kudos on the conversation we had last night about your new big screen.
Oh, yes. God, it's fabulous. But now, I had a 50-inch up on the wall a while back that was, I don't know, 7-8 years old. It had endured its life cycle, and, well, I think it was with me only in spirit form. I could literally get EVPs off of it, I think, because it was dead. Thank goodness I have no friends that have epilepsy. The silly thing would have caused them to have seizures. It gave me headaches, gave my wife headaches, because it would just brighten up. If you could picture putting a rotary dial in the brightness and just sit there and go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, that's what it did. So I'd be watching pretty much any one of the ghost shows, and I'd see everything under the night vision, and I'd go, oh, did you see that? No, hell, I can barely see you. So we broke down and went and purchased a new one. And now I sit in front of the screen, and I kind of look like I should have a bib because I kind of drool at the picture on the screen, and I go, that's what they were talking about. Look at that. There's actually people on the screen. It's not just voices from this white blur. So, yeah, I'm definitely digging the new TV.
Yeah, I have a 37 inch and a 47 inch. So I haven't stepped up to the big boy of your 60 inch yet, but mine seem to do fine.
So
hey,
so basically what you're saying is mine's bigger than yours. Hey, that's pain, what she said.
Pain in my ass. I love you, Dennis.
I love you too, brother. But you know, I can't pass a good one up, man. You open yourself up for them so easily, and I just got to get a dig in there every now and then. Because I know it comes back to me.
Yeah.
Sometimes that scares me.
Once these wheels start turning, you should shiver.
Point.
Hey, you know what? The other thing, too, and I know he's actually probably in the middle of it right now, our dear friend Dane Ladwig, he's doing an interview right now with Chicago Tribune, which has to do with the home stuff, has to do with his book, has to a lot of different subjects. So hopefully, by the end of the night, he'll be able to give a shout in and give us an update on what's going on, because every single day between Dane and Jeff and everybody that's involved, Ursula, you know, with this whole home stuff, there is new developments, there's new descriptions of events that are coming out. The other thing, too, is dear friend Len Dorman, who I know he's going to blow everybody's socks off. He's an amazing guy. Another local Chicagoan. Yes, our frigid asses are taking over tonight. So with Len, he has some great projects coming up. He's involved in some great stuff in the area with Bachelor's Grove Cemetery that everybody knows of. He's involved in a lot with that, with the restoration project, and there's not enough I can say about the guy. I mean, just down to earth, one of the sweetest guys you'll ever meet besides you, Dennis. And just extremely, extremely knowledgeable, energetic, and fun. So he will be joining us probably, I'd say, in the next 10 minutes or so. I believe from when I talked to him when I was on the way home, dude, okay. You know how there's burgers and there's burgers that they try and put on the menu to deter people from eating them, but when they do that, you actually want to eat them more?
Yeah, this is the killer burger. If you can eat it, get on our wall of shame, and et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah, well, this was just below that. So, it was just a normal menu item, but it was habanero peppers, it was sriracha, it was called it, I'm going to have to look this up, and I will actually give you the ingredients, but Mark, Dennis, you know Mark,
yeah.
Him and I went out and got some burgers at this new place. We'll normally go to Smash Burger or a couple of the gourmet burger places around here and just grab something and, you know, see how it is, see what the fuss is about. Well, this one isn't a fuss about. They only have three locations, and they're all local. But I saw it. I was driving past it. I went to their website, which is tomandeddies.com, if anybody's interested. You look through and you read their menu descriptions, and your mouth just starts watering. Well, it's not far. One of the locations is not far from my house, so we decided to go and get a burger. Well, it's, one, not cheap. Secondly, it's damn good, but the portions are small. And I'm trying to find... So the one that I got was the Hot Garion, which is fresh grilled Hungarian pepper, house-made habanero pineapple salsa, Tom and Eddie's signature spicy mayonnaise, topped with melted Wisconsin pepper jack cheese, served on a gourmet sesame seed roll. That's directly off their website.
What size patty are they using?
Well, you can get a quarter pound or half pound burger, depending. So it's either a small or a large. So it's one patty or two patties, and it's all Angus.
Okay, so the reason I ask, I'm just kind of wondering, you know, do I have to dislodge my jaw or do I have to have a flip-top head? Because that sounds like a lot of stuff on one burger.
No, it's reasonable. It's not too bad. But I think that whoever made the habanero pineapple salsa had a dislike for humanity. Because it was every single bite, I'd take a bite, I would tear, I would sweat, and I'd have to wait a couple minutes before each bite. I think for a normal quarter-pound hamburger, cheeseburger, if you will, it took me at least 25, 30 minutes to eat just the burger because it was so damn hot. And it wasn't a challenge thing. I've had ghost chili wings. I've had, a habanero other stuff. But this was, I don't know what habaneros they're getting, but when you took the bun off and you looked at this mixture that was on there, there was flakes of yellow and it was all orange. So it was a good time. It definitely was a good time. Mark was laughing
at
me.
At this point, you're kind of scared to burp then?
Yes. Yes, that's affirmative, yes.
Just give it a day and you won't fear burping.
Well, what's
that? Always remember, what you eat today will burn your ass tomorrow.
What's funny about that, though, is, Mark was laughing at me as I was sitting across the table. He just got the mushroom and Swiss, which they have three different kinds of mushrooms on the mushroom and Swiss. So his was very tame. And he's sitting across, and he's laughing at me. And I got up to go to the bathroom, and I took this, and I don't know if anybody's ever experienced this, but when you take that one bite of hotness of anything, that actually throws your equilibrium off. I stood up and I put my hand on the table and I was swaying back and forth because that one bite that I took, I don't know if I just got enough of the pepper, enough of the habanero, enough of their spicy mayonnaise and the cheese all combined in this mixture, but I actually got dizzy for a second. It was that hot.
Or it could have just been the inner blonde coming out.
Yeah, that's a possibility. My hair is short enough right now, I don't know what the hell color it is. It's usually somewhere between silver. Not as silver as the silver fox. The silver fox.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why.
That would be our...
Go ahead.
That would be our non-gratuitous shout-out to Helmy.
Yeah, and I don't know why every time I talk to him and the silver fox thing is brought up that I get the feeling and the need to actually say it with almost a French accent, like, oh, the Helmy, the silver fox. It just sounds, it sounds better, doesn't it?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I'll grant you. I'll grant you that one. Now, if you could actually pick up a decent James Bond accent, that would sound great. So I have to work on that one.
God, years ago I used to be able to do the Bond who was the best Bond. That don't judge, but the Sean Connery Bond.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, what's there to judge? I mean, other than the fact that, we're giving away our age. But, yeah, he was definitely the one that, Yeah, he was the best Bond, without a doubt.
Roger Moore was up there, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to give Roger Moore a lot of credit on that. He was definitely up there.
Yeah, but I still have to say that Connery just had such a laid-back, suave demeanor about him anyway that, I mean, he just fit perfect in the role.
But, and he still does.
That's just mine. Yeah, and that's just my opinion. I still think he was the best one that they've had, bar none.
Yeah. So, real quick, just want to give a quick question. How bad do you want to go to Bachelor's Grove?
I would definitely love to go check it out. I mean, without a doubt. You know, but much like the abandoned cemetery that's here at Richmond that I posted pictures of, you know, it just fascinates me to no end. Now, that one actually fascinates me more because of the swamp pond out back and what could possibly be in it, you know, with all of the gangster activity and the mobster activity and, you know, just the unknowns that could exist back there. Definitely intrigues me. And what I'd love to do is get like one of those underwater fishing cameras, you know, with the little weighted camera that you sink down and you can look around.
Yeah.
And I don't know how well I would see in that water, but I'm not real sure that I'd want to know what I'm going to see in that water anyway. But speaking of, you know, investigations and locations and so forth, we have I won't say the name of it, but I will say that it's an old lodge that was established in the late 1700s, right here in Richmond, that CPR East is trying to get scheduled now. We've already got the okay. We just have to get a scheduling completed on it. So I will definitely let everybody know about that one once it occurs.
Yeah. That is for sure something that I definitely want to check out. You know what? There's actually, Dennis, if you can elaborate on the what it actually or the claims and stuff like that. I got two callers in queue. I got to check out who's who, and I'll be right back. So yeah, if you got any other information or claims or anything that you've done recently or that you anything else you have coming up.
Yeah, I'll take a few minutes. Go ahead.
I'm
going to
leave you solo while I find out who we got. So hold on. I'll be
not
right
a problem.
Back.
Of course, it'd be easier if you'd shut up and actually go. But, yeah, we've got, I've mentioned it before, there's an abandoned cemetery here in Richmond that started in the late 1800s. Now, I've been, you know, 50, 60, 70 feet back in the woods, still finding headstones that are buried under ivy. And the earliest one that I've found so far was in 1901. And if I remember correctly, it was a 6 or 7 year old child's grave. And it's kind of hard to read it. I didn't have any paper with me to do scribbling, you know, so I couldn't really detect what all was on the marker. But the amazing thing is, even with, you know, most of this thing being hidden by ivy and, you know, there are headstones that are upturned by trees growing, there was one grave in there that I think couldn't be any more than 6 months old. And it just dumbfounded me that in the midst of all of this mess, there's all these new, well, fairly new, arrangements and so forth on one grave, and it's literally in the middle of the woods. But from everything that I can discover, this place was owned privately. They went bankrupt. Another investment firm purchased into it. They sold part of it to the city of Richmond. City of Richmond takes care of that small portion, but it's definitely a small portion. But one of the cool things, they have an area there called the Garden of Lilies, and it was for the indigent pauper children. You know, when they had the plague rolled through and tuberculosis and Lord knows what else, this was where all of the pauper children were laid to rest. All unmarked. I don't even recall seeing like just a little square marker with a number on it. But it was definitely fascinating. And to walk through, and unfortunately, as with just about any place like this that gets abandoned, there was a crypt off to the side. At some point in time, they had taken off the iron gates to the crypt and walled in the access to it. And, you know, unfortunately, some lowlife decided to go in, bust through the concrete that was placed there, through the cinder blocks, you know, and just desecrated the, which, you know, I'd love to find out who did that, just so I can pummel them. But, you know, we did an EVP session in there. No, we didn't go in, don't get me wrong. I set my, actually, I think I set the H2 right on the doorway to it, up in the wall line, and I asked, can you tell us how many were laid to rest in here? Well, we can see four caskets inside, and I've got a definitive deep male voice responding, four. So that was pretty fascinating, and at some point in time, you know, we'll go back and we'll do, you know, further investigations in the cemetery and, you know, perhaps break out the night vision cameras and so forth and see what we can find. But it just fascinates me that this cemetery has been abandoned. You know, moss and ivy and everything and trees, like I said, uprooting headstones, trees right in front of headstones, which would have to be the burial locations. So it's definitely a fascinating place, which, you know, for some reason it makes me think a lot of Bachelor's Grove, with pretty much abandoned, you know, you just really don't know what all's in there.
It's, you know, from the pictures you sent, and yes, I do concur. I did hear the EVP that you had sent me, and you didn't say anything about then. I know I heard a couple different things, but the first one that I heard was the four. Then it was, you know, 440 or there, you know, just listening to it in the medium that I was listening to was probably the issue, but no, it was definitely clear. So as far as the,
it was a pretty loud voice too.
Yeah. As far as cemeteries go and other projects, we have Len with us now. Hey, Len, how's it going, boss?
Uh-oh. Hey, Len, are you here with us, or did we lose you?
I am right here listening to you.
There he is.
There you are.
So what's up, buddy?
Welcome aboard, sir.
What's up with me?
Yeah, what's going on with you?
Not much. Same old boring stuff. And you know I'm lying.
Len, if there's one thing I know about you and the times that we've hung out, you are never boring.
And this is true. I was just fascinated by your conversation about the cemetery down around Richmond. That would definitely bear some research.
Yeah, it's well worth it. And there's, I don't know how many people are aware of a woman named Maggie Walker. Richmond has one or two schools named after her. First female African-American bank president. She's laid to rest in this cemetery. Her grave and the surrounding area from it was cleaned up sometime in the past couple of years by a college fraternity. There's indications that they've been through and tried to do some cleaning. But, you know, you've got some historical people in there that, you know, it's just a shame that this place has gone to pot like it has.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but can I ask a question here?
Sure.
Yeah. You would like.
Who owns the property?
Right now, I do not know who the property owner is. That's something that I still have to check into. I know, like I said, a portion of it was sold off to the city. And that was done in order to be able to fund the purchase of the rest of it, that whatever, I believe it's some corporate entity that purchased it. So, you know, their purchase was dependent upon the city buying the portion that they did buy. But it's rather fascinating. If you look at my Facebook page, CPR Dennis, you'll see a picture folder there named The Four Cemeteries at Evergreen or something like that. And, you know, that'll give you an idea what it looked like. Actually, my, I don't know what they call the very top picture on your Facebook wall, but the very top picture there is a portion of it that has already kind of been cleaned up. You know, and it looks like it was a very prestigious cemetery at one time. It's got the concrete borders around portions of the graves. You know, just some of them have the older Gothic wrought iron fence around their portion. I mean, it looks like it was a beautiful cemetery at one time.
Well, you ought to look into it, see who owns the property, and maybe start looking at consolidating all of it under one roof, you know, one owner, and seeing if you can get some either corporate sponsors or maybe several groups to try to at least get it all cleaned up and maybe kind of restore it as a cemetery.
Yeah, and I thought that it would be, you know, pretty neat to do something like that, much along the lines of what's been done with, you know, there in Chicago for Bachelor's Grove. And the other part of me, and, you know, Matt, you're familiar with Helny. Helny Kramer and I had spoken one time. Both of us are kind of fascinated more by the fact that Mother Nature reclaimed what was rightfully hers. So it kind of throws me in a personal quandary as to, you know, do I really want to see it cleaned up, or would I much rather see Mother Earth and Mother Nature take back what was originally hers? So I don't know how that sits with you, but that's kind of my thinking on it.
There is that question, too, and Len, I know, I mean, how much time have we spent at Bachelor's Grove? I mean, with the overgrowth and everything that's going on there, and the restoration project isn't to remove any of that stuff and turn it into just an open field with headstones. It's to just get it back to a respectful manner, and I think that Lem would agree with that. I mean, it's not like we're bringing in excavating stuff to take down trees or anything like that. It's just there's headstones that have been kicked over and cracked off, and just desecration to the tombs and the monuments themselves, that is pretty much what the restoration project's about, and get the trash and all that stuff out of there.
Well, get the trash out and some of the monuments that they're putting them back together, and putting them back together with steel reinforcement and mortar so they can't be kicked over again.
Yeah.
Well, fortunately, this one is not, and I'm dumbfounded, and I'm thrilled at the same time. This one hasn't really been vandalized a great deal. Now, some of the larger markers, it looks like they've just settled and fallen over, but it doesn't look like they've been, you know, outright vandalized. You know, as far as the crypt that was broken into and that being desecrated, that pretty much strikes me as about the majority of the vandalism that was done here. most of it, I think, is just neglect, where ivy and trees have just been allowed to grow amok. And like one of the pictures that I showed on my on the album I was talking about, which it, I did name it the Four Cemeteries at Bachelor's, or
yeah,
the Four Cemeteries at Evergreen, because there are four. Now, I don't know how large of a geographic footprint Bachelor's Grove is, but this thing, I can guarantee you it will take me 45 minutes to walk from one side of it to the other.
Wow.
It is massive.
Bachelor's Grove is about 1 acre.
Oh, good Lord.
1 acre this square, one, that's about it.
Yeah, this one, if I remember in the little bit of research that I did do, I think this one's something like 12 acres.
So maybe about 12 times the size of Bachelor's Grove. Of course, at Bachelor's Grove, you have the woods behind it, some of the old house foundations, and that's where some of the psychics have told me is where they pick up the more evil presence is in the woods behind Bachelor's Grove, which is actually a matter of yards or a matter of maybe an eighth of a mile behind the cemetery. It's the really bad spots there in that area.
Hmm. That makes you wonder, you know, does that have anything to do? Now, is that back towards the, what was it, like a swamp pond? Or what they?
The pond is between the cemetery and the road. So if you call the road the front part, which was actually originally the back part, because the highway switched sides. The Lithonian Highway that used to run in front of the cemetery now runs more or less behind the cemetery, on the other side of the pond.
Okay. So,
because they removed the highway.
The woods, where's the pond?
The other side of the cemetery.
Okay. See, I was thinking that maybe there was a correlation between, you know, the I mean, it's reputed to have had, you know, mob hits with burials back there and so forth. So, you know, I was thinking maybe they were kind of correlated, but.
Well, it could be because
the
stream it feeds the pond does run through these woods.
Hmm.
And the darker areas are most of them are right around the stream that feeds the pond. So there is a little bit of correlation there.
Well, also we have the, you know, it's thought that moving water feeds the energy for, feeds energy to the spirit. So, you know, perhaps that's a correlation too.
And there's no outflow from the pond. The only outflow, they drilled the holes when they built the Midlothian Highway, they put the holes so high that once it starts draining under the Midlothian Highway, the cemetery is going to be partially underwater, because the water will back up right into the edge of the graves themselves before it starts flowing out. So you're talking about a stream flowing through some evil-feeling areas going into a pond with no outflow whatsoever.
Well,
and this pond is a former rock quarry, which means the water really cannot soak into the ground. Because
it'll virtually never dry.
Right.
Yeah, it's an interesting layout when you go there. And also with Robinson Woods right across the street too, there's a stream that runs through Robinson Woods that has a split off that goes into the pond at Bachelor's Grove too. If you looked at it, you'd be like, why the hell would they design something this way and put a cemetery here? So,
well, that I've looked at a dozen cemeteries, probably 100 cemeteries, and like, why the hell would you put one here? You know, but I think it's a matter of, well, anytime that you're going to do a cemetery, I think you just kind of take whatever land you can get because you know you need a large plot. So they kind of take whatever large plot of land they can get and, you know, it may not exactly be the best topographical area, but, I mean, the topography is not the important part, but getting the land is. You know, the town that I grew up in northwest Ohio, ironically, my father actually worked at a cemetery that, but it was in the lowest lying area for a couple of miles in any given direction. If we had, kind of the like monsoon season rains, the cemetery would flood. And you would literally have caskets pushing up out of the ground. You know, some of the very early ones that were placed before a concrete vault system was utilized, you would have caskets push up out of the ground. So, again, I think it wasn't a matter of they were worried about the topography so much as they were getting a bulk portion of land.
True. Speaking of stuff that we've done and stuff that's up and coming, Len, I know you have some stuff that's coming up. What do you got going on?
Are you speaking to me?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the next thing coming up will be an investigation of Camp Douglas. And for your listeners who are not familiar with Camp Douglas, it was a Civil War prison camp. It was actually opened up as a boot camp at the very start of the war for people recruited in Chicago and the surrounding area. The land was donated to the federal government by Stephen Douglas. Yes, the Stephen Douglas that debated Lincoln. And it was he was a real estate speculator. And this is land that his house actually sat on, and he donated about two-thirds of it to the federal government, 88 acres. And after capturing a few Confederates early on in the war down in Kentucky, they had no place to put them, so they brought them up to Camp Douglas. And they were not prepared to be a prison camp, but they ended up at times during 63 and 64 with close to 20,000 people in the prison camp and close to that many soldiers there in various stages of training. They trained a lot of artillery people for the Union Army there. Now, the problem with the place, of course, smallpox breaks out when you crowd a bunch of adults, especially back in those days. And, of course, smallpox broke out, and they put a smallpox hospital at the southern end of the camp. There are no good records of how many people died in the smallpox hospital. Inspectors, of course, did not want to go in the smallpox hospital, and can you blame them?
No.
And according to most records that they can figure out, close to 6,000 people died here from 1861 through 1865. And that doesn't include the suffering and the torture that went on. As punishment, a lot of times they would take the prisoners during a Chicago winter and make them stand. Remember I said it was kind of a swampy area. During the spring and fall rainy seasons in Chicago, the place would flood. And even though the barracks were 14 inches off the ground, many times during the spring and fall, the prisoners would be walking ankle-deep in water. One of the punishments they did was, of course, as water froze in the wintertime, was make them stand outside on the ice. And they'd stand in one spot until their body heat melted the ice under their feet and they were standing on the ground. Some of them they made drop their pants, sit their bare butts on the ice, and they would sit there in one spot until their butt melted the ice to the bare ground. Another punishment they had was the mule. And I will have a replica of a mule for the investigation. Is this going to be one of the, to me, one of the greatest trigger objects that's ever been designed? What it was, if you, are you familiar with what a hitching post looks like in your old Western movies?
Sure.
No.
Okay. Picture one.
Two vertical timbers and a cross line.
Picture one, about half that width, but higher. And instead of a single crossbar, it's got two relatively close together. One at the top, one just a few inches below. Now you have two of them parallel.
Okay.
And a 2x6 running between them. That's why you have the two, the two parallel bars, one at the top and one about 2 to 3 inches further down. So you slip a 2x6 in between them. And they would make, and remember, now this is raw wood. This is back in the mid-1860s. Back when a 2x6 was a 2x6. Not like now, where they're, what, 1¾ by 5¾.
5¼, right.
Back then, they were 2x6, and these were unmilled 2x6s. And this was, one of them they had down there was 15 feet off the ground. Others were varying heights where their legs could not touch the ground. And they would make the prisoners sit on that thing by the hour.
Just sit there.
Yes. And then they'd bounce the 2x6 up and down. It was actually a modification of a toy. They actually showed one. If you remember the old miniseries, North and South, they actually had one shown in that miniseries for about 15 seconds that was something for the kids to play on. They could stand on it, jump up and down, you know, just for, you know, kind of a romper, outside romper room type thing that replaces, you know, that was a pre-version of a slide or some kind of little thrill thing that we put together now. They would sit on the 2x6 and bounce up and down. Well, it's one thing to stand on 2x6. That's a little bit of a thrill if you can maintain your balance on a 2x6 while somebody's moving it up and down. It's another thing to sit on it by the hour.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was kind of, you know, little bit complex thought in my head and getting a mental image. There's just nothing pleasant about that at all.
No. Well, it'd be one thing to sit on it, you know, with your legs on one side of the board, with just your butt sitting on it. That wouldn't be a bad deal. You can kind of hold on with your hands and bounce up and down and kind of enjoy the ride. But when you're straddling it, that would hurt after about 5 seconds sitting on it.
Yeah.
And what we're going to do is we're going to build one and have it on site. For a trigger object.
Definitely keep a audio recorder at all times.
Yes. Now the I've been talking to several reenactors, and they're planning on coming. So we'll have some Union guards and hopefully some Confederate prisoners to push around.
Yeah, I'd definitely love to attend this one.
And
shame you're so far away from me.
I'm going to tape some foam rubber and some padding on the mule in two places so we can actually put Confederate prisoners on the 2x6.
I'll say, I'll volunteer because, Dennis, I get to go on this one. I'll volunteer as long as there is padding, because if there's not, and we do have a recorder going, all you're going to hear is ow, 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 ow,
mm-hmm.
ow.
I've got some foam rubber. I'm going to duct tape to it. Also got some rubber padding, and probably bring pillows, two older pillows that we can put on top of that. So it'd be a nice little cushy ride.
Yeah, because I've seen Matt, and he has no cushion. Naturally, so. Yeah, he definitely needs something on the board. He's been taking extra noacetol pills.
But is in the past at Camp Douglas. Now, a couple of years ago, now, Matt, I do believe you know Dave Wisner.
Yeah.
At Midnight Paranormal Society.
Yeah, we just did Great Escape. Everybody was there. Yeah.
Right. He and I, of course, I was with Midnight Paranormal Society one time, and Dave and I's first hunt together, we hit where the boat turned over in the river.
Okay, yes.
Then we hit Camp Douglas. Then we hit the Stephen Douglas tomb. Then we hit Oak Woods, where the Confederates are buried and their memorial is. Then we left there and went to Baxter's Grove. This is during the daytime. In the middle of Camp Douglas, Camp Douglas only covered about a third of Lake Meadows Park. Almost in the middle of the Camp Douglas location, I was walking along with the meter, and all of a sudden it went from absolute zero, because remember, I'm walking in a park with no underground wires, no overhead wires. Now, it's got a couple of street lights, but they were well behind me. Well, I should say park lights, the walk lights. They were well behind me. Street lights were actually across the street. Plus half the width of the Camp Douglas location. So there were no wires anywhere near me. And all of a sudden, my meter went from absolute zero to four. But only in a meter square area, extending up to slightly over my head and down to my knee level, and about a meter across. Now, inside this meter cube, I was getting a four. I go outside that meter cube and registered zero. And this is all in midair, not attached to a wall or anything. I'm in the middle of a public park getting a meter reading like that. And then Dave and I started asking questions, and it got interactive. We were trying to peg down the year, their name. I believe his name was John. And then the signal started fading. What he did is he increased the signal slightly and decreased it slightly for, you know, the yes and no. Then he started getting weaker. I had to move, turn slightly to my left and take a step or two forward. But it started shrinking. And after about 15 minutes, it shrunk down to from a meter square cube to a foot square cube. And finally faded away completely. And there was just no reason for a meter to go off in the middle of the air like that, in the middle of a park outside.
Yeah, that's definitely an oddity.
So there's no explanation for it. And unfortunately, the video we took of that got lost in a hard drive crash.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, that reminds me. Any of you that are, you know, doing investigations and you store your evidence and so forth after review on your computer, take the little extra bit of money, buy a decent external USB backup drive. I can't tell you how much I've lost in hard drive crashes or, you know, not necessarily evidence, but, you know, just information in general.
Well, that's something
you never know.
Mm-hmm. I have an external on my desktop, and I have a smaller external on my laptop. So now, something like that is completely backed up. Unfortunately, it was not my camera. I was busy holding a meter in my hand. I did not have an active camera in my hand. It was taken by somebody else, and they downloaded it off their camera, so they could go do something else with the camera. And that and a lot of other stuff they were putting together got totally lost. But,
that's unfortunate. I have, I think, probably for the years that I've been doing this, I have at least 15 to 20 thumb drives that are like 64 mega piece that I have labeled like per, I'll dump off quarterly, so I'll do January through March and then April through, you know, like so, and then I'll label them and I'll date them. So if I do need something and my laptop crashes or my desktop crashes or something like that, I can go back and reload and do whatever and don't lose it. The one problem is that I've noticed too, little food for thought, make sure that you do it under a program that works with everything. Because some of the audio programs, they don't cross over and they don't recognize the files. So, little food for thought.
That's a good thought.
Well, that is a good thought. You got to have compatibility. You start going from Apple to you know, a PC or some of your older PC programs like you know, XP or 98 Second Edition if you want to get really old school. And then you got Vista, and of course now you got 7, and now you got 8.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you got to get something compatible to you know, if you've got it on XP, make sure it works with 7.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've run into, like my older little Sony digital recorder, it will, like the software and drivers for it are supported by, oh, Vista 32-bit, but my laptop has the 64-bit, so I don't have drivers for it, so I have to use it on my old gaming computer that runs Windows XP Professional, so I can actually pull them from the recorder into the desktop, throw them to a jump drive, and then bring them to the laptop to play with them because it won't, I can't interact with the recorder from the laptop.
Right.
Now, fortunately, the software that I use functions on all of the above, but it definitely makes it tricky. It makes it, you know, just a little more pain in the keister to do your review, but I don't know. I didn't get into this for it to be easy.
Right. Well, Camp Douglas, by the way, this will be held on April the 13th. Now, I'm going to start interviews at about 5. Any group is setting up some night vision cameras is welcome to come down there and start setting up. At 7 o'clock, there is a gentleman that has written, and I capitalize V, T-H-E, capital letters, the book on Camp Douglas. This man is not into the paranormal at all. It's strictly an historical record of what happened at Camp Douglas on a year basis, on a commander-to-commander basis. He did a tremendous amount of research. He's got a huge number of sources. And the name of it is To Die in Chicago. Because of the 6,000 people who died there. He will be there doing a synopsis of his book, a slideshow presentation for the first time on site.
Oh, wow.
This may be a trigger object even better or bigger than the mule being there. Because you can imagine a spirit on location. And all of a sudden, here's this guy with a modern slideshow with a screen talking about what happened there when the spirit lived through it.
And the spirit's thinking, what the hell do you know about this? I was here.
Yeah. And after he is done, David Keller is going to be there and speak for a little bit. He is, his website is campdouglas.org. He is chairman of the Camp Douglas Restoration Foundation. And he, one of the things that I've got, by the way, this is only a $15 investigation to me just to recoup my expenses. But I am requiring anybody investigating to buy a pin from David Keller. That's how he makes his money, a Camp Douglas pin for $5. So a $20 total investigation cost. For an investigation will take place from approximately 8:30, 9 o'clock p.m. to daybreak.
Wow.
Because my permit goes from closing, which is 9 p.m., basically to open, which is 8 or 9 a.m.
So we know.
Is Camp Douglas a non-profit location?
Camp Douglas is a public park.
Okay.
I had to talk to the city and get them to give me a first ever research permit for an overnight investigation.
Now, did you mention paranormal research in your applications or anything by chance?
Yes, I did, because they had to know what kind of research I was doing.
I'm kind of stunned then that they pushed it on through, even though it mentioned paranormal. Matt knows exactly why.
they are kind of excited about it. They thought it was very different. I was the talk of the park district for a while, probably still am. Because they're interested, and I've actually invited some park district personnel to come down and listen to George Levy and his presentation on his book, To Die in Chicago. Because they're interested, because they don't really know the history of Camp Douglas, especially the people who run the park. Because there is an office there, and there's three or four people working in the office Monday through Friday at that park to organize activities.
No idea.
And they have no idea. They don't have a clue. And
yeah, it's like city appointed employees that if you were to ask them, you know, even what year it was established, they probably couldn't tell you.
No, they couldn't. Now, this is, well, you know that Ed Shanahan has an event coming up also in April.
Yes.
About an investigation of a hotel that Al Capone owned. Not the one his headquarters is in. That one's torn down. This is one he owned. The Blue Star Automotive Parts Company is there now on the first floor.
Yeah.
He's got a permit to go on. It's a daytime investigation. They're not allowed in there at night to investigate the I believe it's a floor or two above the parts company. It's more or less investigating the history of the mob. This could not have been done under certain regimes here in Chicago, not to name names. But now that we have a new mayor here, he's allowing things like this to happen because he's got bigger fish to fry. Whereas the mob history and the history of Camp Douglas has been suppressed under past regimes here.
See, Dennis, I wasn't BSing it. I told you. And Len, thank you for, without even provoking that out of you, I've been talking about it forever of how everything in Chicago that has to do with paranormal or mob or anything like that is swept under the rug. You're not allowed to do it. It's hush-hush. Don't even attempt it unless, I mean, you're a multimillionaire to try and get it done. So thank you for that, because that solidifies what I've been saying for how long of how hard it is to do anything paranormal or anything mob-related research in the city or the outskirts of Chicago.
Well, you know, there is another part to that. There's a certain theater where a certain mobster, John Dillinger, saw his last movie. when the people who own that theater took it over, part of their lease agreement was they can never, ever, ever show the movie Manhattan Melodrama, nor can they ever have any kind of event in reference to John Dillinger, or their lease will be automatically revoked and their door be padlocked. That was in their lease. It still is.
Well, that's ridiculous.
I did not know that.
That's what the city put on. And I got that information from the manager of the theater last year. Because they actually allowed me inside the Biograph with a video camera. Of course, they've rebuilt the whole place. It's now two or three different small theaters. They do plays there. But, of course, the lobby really hadn't changed a whole lot. So I was allowed to go into the lobby and do some videotaping on the anniversary of the death of John Dillinger. And then I went down and investigated the alley daytime. I also shot some pictures and video of the old Red Lion, which is just half a block away, you know, 2-minute walking distance. And then went back and after the late Richard Crowe had his John Dillinger event there, where he took the exact minute that John Dillinger walked out of the Biograph, we slowly walked down the alley, and the exact minute he was shot, Richard Crowe poured a beer in the spot where the body fell. And I waited till we was done. Hopefully, I was hoping that the activity would spur up something, but I did not get anything in that alley that night. And would you believe I couldn't talk anybody in my group to go with me?
Todd, you got my number. Just give me a shout.
I actually got to spend about an hour and a half sitting at the bar with Richard Crowe having a couple of beers.
Yeah,
I'm having a hard time thinking of a location that you couldn't get me to go along with.
I had an incredible night that night, and I begged people in my group to come with me, and everybody, it was a week evening, and nobody could come. And there's people still regret that.
You know, I do have to say, and I know he was a friend of yours and Ursula's and a bunch of our mutual friends and everything. I just have to say, hats off to Richard Crowe for his developments, for everything that he did in the field, just being such an amazing, friendly, just nice person. Still wish he was here. But
yes, he's the one that got me into the Westerners group because of our common interest in the Westerners. I still go to those meetings. And in the Salt Creek Civil War Roundtable, he was a member of that and got me to join that group. So to say my life was influenced by Richard Crowe would be a massive understatement.
Yeah.
It's Richard Crowe's memory that I'm doing these events at Camp Douglas. And I would also like to say that in May, I will be doing an investigation. I've already got the permit for this, too, to do City Cemetery. Have not set the date yet. There is a fair that goes on in Lincoln Park during the week of May, and I'm waiting for them to nail down a week so that I can nail down a weekend other than when they are there. So it may be early in May, it may be late May, maybe in the middle of May. I'm not sure yet. But I'm going to need 8 to 10 groups of whatever they can get there. You know, 3 to 5 to 8 people each, because we are looking at a place, if you've ever been to Lincoln Park, from the zoo into the end of Lincoln Park. And I've had people tell, David Wisner is one that says it's not a quarter of a mile, like I was saying. He said it's more like a half a mile. But it's also about the same distance wide. So you can see why I need at least 5 or 6 groups, and preferably maybe 10, because I can have 10 groups of 5 people and scatter them all over that area, and they're not going to be able to see or hear each other. Everybody can do an EVPs, and nobody's interfering with anybody else. That's going to be an incredible investigation. Our common friend Ursula Belsky says there's 3,500 people still buried there. Every time Lincoln Park, in Lincoln Zoo, digs out a lion cage or does any kind of digging to place any kind of building, they usually dig up a body. The people moving that cemetery, when they wanted to move it and build a park there, were crooked. There may still be some Confederates, because that's where they were originally buried, the city cemetery. So you can see the relation to Camp Douglas. But the guy moving them was getting paid a little bit over $4 per grave to move, and he was having people build him caskets at $2 and putting dirt and rock in the casket and moving it instead of digging up the grave and then just pulling up the stones. So that's why Ursula says that there could be up to 3,500 people still buried under that park. Now there is a big building there. There are 4 or 5 softball fields there. There is a full-sized soccer field with synthetic turf there, along with acres of open parkland. And I'm talking about several football field lengths of open park. You know, people going to play with the dogs or jog or whatever. So this is going to be an amazing investigation. It's never been done at night, at least legally, because you can't go in there at night. And when the place closes down, it's basically going to be all mine because it's my name on the permit. And Camp Douglas, I'm going to be restricted. I can only have about 3 or 4 groups. We're going to have to be really quiet. There are apartments nearby. And when one group's doing EVPs, everybody else is going to have to kind of walk away or be really, really quiet, give everybody respect, because we are in a small area. But at City Cemetery, we're going to be in an open area, and I can need as many as a dozen groups, 5 to 8 to 10 people a piece, to try to investigate, you know, every square acre of that place. Because it's such a huge area. It's going to be hard to get it together. I'm going to need some people to work with me. And I don't think it'll be any problem running all over each other, but I do have it all night. We can start setting up before it gets dark, and then when the park closes down, we got the place to ourselves till daylight.
Well, I'll definitely be on that. As far as getting groups together, and I mean, you know, I'll for sure. I do have to give a quick shout out to Samantha. She had kind of elective emergency surgery today to find out what's wrong with her. So hopefully that she's gonna work out and pull through that. By that time, I'm sure she'll be healed, and I know she'll be in. So. But otherwise, local groups and stuff like that. We'll get it put together for you, man. I have no doubt about that. So I mean, between myself and Ursula, I'll put it out to David Scott and John Stevens and those guys, and have them contact people they know. And networking is key. That's why I love and I hate Facebook at the same time.
Yeah, it's a love-hate relationship with everybody, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So,
now, one group I've worked with at Ethel's party, the bar, was the week before you and I were there, was Bumpin' the Night Paranormal from Joliet.
Yeah.
A man named Ron Smiles runs that. He's a police officer down in Joliet. Has a lady named Laura that co-founded it with him. And she's a little bit of a feeler, I think you'd call her. She would deny being a psychic. But she actually found the name of the little girl that is at Ethel's party.
Really?
Yes. And by the way, you missed it. You heard me say this when we were at The Great Escape. but it's kind of funny. I just felt it. I was in the cold room by myself. Frank Heiberger once again left me in the basement alone. He said he had got a long history of this. I know it's getting to be a running joke. Who can leave Lynn Dorman on the second floor, or the third floor, or the attic, or the basement alone? But, you know, there it was. Frank is a big hockey fan. He's a really nice guy. He's a great investigator. He's getting a pretty good team together for what he's trying to do. And we're good friends, so I rib him about leaving me places. And it's getting to be a continuing story, though. But I was in the cold room. And if you don't know how funeral homes are made, back in 1908, there was, no refrigeration. There was no air conditioning. So you literally had daily visits from the Iceman. Of course, that's the only way you keep an icebox in your house. Some guy named Swin, you know, comes around with a block of ice every day. So at a funeral home, we took several blocks of ice, you know, put the body on ice. You know, that's where that came from. But in the cold room, I was investigating it just a couple of months ago, and if you've ever had one of those little, your friend come up to you, touch you on your chest, what is this? And when you bow your head, they come up and hit you on the bottom of your nose with their finger. That happened to me in the cold room. And as I reacted to it, and of course stood straight up, I heard a blip, and it sounded like somebody with the back of their hand hit the brim of my hat and knocked it about 3 feet behind me. I was down there again with somebody, and I was sitting on a bar stool and bracing myself. I was all nice and kind of comfortable, and got one of my right foot kicked out from under me, and I almost hit the floor. While after you left, you and Ursula left, I went down there and felt a tingling under my head. I didn't think anything about it. A day or two later, I had an itch in the same place and reached up to scratch it. I had about a 3-inch-long cut in my scalp in the same place I felt the tingling when I was in that cold room. And I have not bumped my head or scraped it or, you know, touched it against anything to put a cut there. There's a girl there that likes me. She will walk up behind me and try to speak. She is put out the fact that she likes to jump rope, so I now have a jump rope for next time I go in there. Of course, the reason I'm talking about this is that right now, of course, this is an operating bar. They, of course, have a big basketball crowd, and you know what time of year it is. If you're not a basketball fan, it's a weird thing called March Madness. And, of course, they have a big crowd in there. There's a lot of, let's say, recreational talking about who wins and who not. Gambling. all who wins and loses. But that's beside the point. We can't get in there. Because they'd be watching late-night basketball, and they'd be watching TV till 1:30 in the morning. So that cuts down investigation time. But in April, after March Madness, I will be asking if any group wants to come in there to please contact me on Facebook. It's Lynn Dorman, LENDORMAN. If you're not friends with me, you need to befriend me, send me a request. I got over 2,000 friends in there. So I'd be glad to bring a group in there. I can arrange it for a Saturday night. It will be from midnight. We can go in there by 11 o'clock, maybe set your DVR system up early, go down to the basement, get your cameras ready. So we're well away from their customers. And when the last customer leaves around midnight, we can lock it up, put some covers over the light, over the windows, and we're good till dawn. And this is only a $25 investigation.
So when do you want to schedule it?
Anytime in April. So I'm putting this out to any of your listeners, any of the founders of groups, the head of groups, the president of groups, whatever they call themselves. They want to contact me on Facebook. Now, I cannot, the bartender stays there with us all night. I will never do two weekends in a row. And Beth's a very nice person, but when she says something like that, that's the law of the land, so we're not going to do two in a row. But basically, I'm wide open right now. I don't have anybody scheduled for April. And they said that I can bring basically any group in there I want to, but you got to talk to me first. And then I'll talk to Beth, the bartender, and we'll get it set up through the owners. Now, this will not be the entire building. They put a no on the entire building, but the bar is free to investigate. And this is a funeral home that we opened up in 1908 through 1995, the Coletta Brothers Funeral Home. And I will tell you, this has a mob connection. I found out through research, I found out through investigation, that it had something to do with Al Capone, which I had not seen in anybody else's research. But through the researching, which is always advisable when you investigate a place, that also in 1908, a gentleman named Bruno Rodi opened up a grocery store and moved in upstairs, you know, like so many businesses were in the early 20th century. The bar is located at 26th in Wentworth. His place was at 21st in Wentworth, five blocks away. And you say, okay, what does a grocer have to do with a funeral home? Well, this guy came from Italy and started running the Black Hands Gang, which shook down Italians immigrating here for money or whatever. He re-ran that gang until a man named Al Capone came to Chicago and took over that gang. And Bruno Rodi became the first Kappa of Chinatown. His nickname was the Bomber, Bruno the Bomber Rodi. He was one of two guys that with Al Capone wanted to reach out and touch somebody in an explosive manner. He was one of the ones that installed it. His connection to Ethel's, his funeral was held there in 1957 and was one of the largest funerals put in that place. They had 3,000 people lining the streets for his procession down to the cemetery.
You know, and being at Ethel's party, and with the amount of people that were there when we were there, and yeah, I did have to work the next day, so I couldn't stick around for the full evening. As soon as you walk in the door. Oh, by the way, Len,
yeah.
I don't know where you got it from, but that damn pizza was absolutely delicious.
There's a place that's known, they have two or three locations in Chicago, and they are known for good pizza. And there's a place that I can literally walk from the side door to their front door in 2 minutes. They're half a block away.
I don't, you know what, I was actually going to go canvas the neighborhood and try and figure out where it was, and well, just a little north of there isn't a good area to canvas if you're thinking of checking this place out. There are certain areas to stay away from that's not far from where Ethel's party is.
Yes, it's on the south side of Chinatown. They used to call it Tito's on the Edge, and they call it Tito's on the Edge for a reason.
Yes.
Because it's on the edge of Chinatown.
Yeah.
But there's a pizza place just a half a block away.
But anyway, no, what I was getting at is when you walk into Ethel's party, there's this underlying feeling that you're walking back into the past. Excuse me with these temperature changes, my throat is just
right.
horrendous right now. But yeah, no. When you walk into Ethel's party, it's seriously you have that instantaneous feeling that you're back in the past, even though that you know you're in the present. You know that you're there in the present. But there's this kind of look over your shoulder, and you look through a wormhole into the teens and the 20s and 30s and 40s of what that place has been through. You actually do physically get that feeling. It's actually pretty cool. I mean, to be honest,
did you go down to the basement?
I didn't get a chance to go in the basement, but I was talking to the bartender and talking with you and Ursula and everything about doing a return visit. So that's probably the one that you're talking about, or one that is a potential.
Right.
It was with the amount of people, and I have to say thank you for everybody who showed up to that event too. I mean, but for what it was too hectic, it was too complex, it was too, that basically you had to throw everything out as soon as you got anything.
Right, it was too many people, there was too much noise.
Yeah.
Now, later at night, it got quiet. We actually spoke to the little girl that's there, but half the people were downstairs. And we were sitting upstairs with our feet off the floor. And Dave Wisner said, that was very quiet when he was downstairs. He did not get any bleed over. He did not hear us at all, even though we were actually talking quietly. You don't have to. If you're in a room, there's not much of the sound. You don't have to scream. Sat there and just had a nice 30-minute long conversation with her. And it wasn't just me. Of course, I started talking to her without telling anybody there's something here. I just turned around. I could see the movement in the air coming behind me and knew that's how she likes to approach me. You know how you can feel when something walks up behind you. I had that feeling, turn around, I could see the air moving like there was a heater sitting on the floor. And I knew that's not normal. So I saw it moving toward me. I said, okay, this is a little girl. So I started talking to her without telling anybody else in the room what was going on. So, of course, I had about 6 or 7 people looking at me like I was an idiot because I'm talking to the air. And I finally turned around, and there's a feeler there that works with Frank Heiberger, Anna, a very nice person. And I looked at her. I said, do you feel anything? And she stood up. She said, I feel a female presence. So she came around by me, and the two of us started talking. A person that works, Kenneth, that works with Dave Wisner in the Midnight Paranormal Society, came down and knelt down with a mail meter. And while anywhere due to the leaking wires, you get a little bit of reading residual anywhere you want to go in that place.
Yeah.
About a 1 on your one and a half on your various meters. All of a sudden, his mail meter started going up to 5 and 6 and 7. In this one spot where I was talking to the air. And all this we got on camera. Frank Heiberger was shooting with his 3D. I was shooting with my full spectrum. And all this is all the interaction. Now, the cameras apparently didn't pick up anything, although I want to review it again, because at first look, in the little view screen on the camera, it looked like a little girl's outline. Now, if you look at it, you can say, okay, that's a trick of the lighting, because with cross-spectrum lighting, you're using IR, you're using UV, and you're using a cross-spectrum, which means it's got a red light, but it's not a pure red. It's leaning toward IR red. You've got a blue that's more of a purple because it's leaning toward the UV. And then you have a green light, which doesn't give you a pure white light. It gives you a little bit of brightness. So you can kind of see what you're doing in the room. It's not pitch black. and that can throw some interesting shadows, so you could call what I've got matrixing. But it looked like the little girl talking, and while I was talking to the little girl, Beth was at the bar, on the customer side of the bar, with her feet up in a chair. The one who bothers her is a guy in his mid to late 20s. The girl, by the way, she apparently passed away in a car wreck that was this place is right off the Dan Ryan. I mean, you can hear the train go by. And when I say train, I'm talking about the red line. But she died in a car wreck almost in front of the bar on the Dan Ryan. And this is just where she went. She cannot communicate and doesn't see the other children. There's two or three other children in the bar. There's about 25 spirits in Ethel's party. This guy cannot interact with her, but he was trying to get Beth's attention. Beth was trying to get my attention. And, of course, I was fully occupied talking to the little girl. The spirit got mad because he could not get her attention nor anybody else's. And I swear to you, in the video camera, and it looks like shadowing, when you blow it up on full screen, it looks like he photobombed my video by sticking his head sideways in front of her. Which is, if that's true, would be wild. You still with me?
Yeah.
Yeah. No sound.
I get enveloped in listening to you talk. Like I sit there and I'm like, oh, okay, more. More, which is why I didn't do anything for, because I know we can fill 2 hours plus and just us talking.
But I have had some interesting things happen. I don't know, call me lucky, call it gifted or whatever, but I've had some interesting times. I'm the one, you know, that Ursula Belsky is planning a tour, date is not announced, to go to St. Louis. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You know she's planning on increasing the St. Louis trip. She wants to go to the original Mineral Springs that's in Alton, I believe, right?
Yes.
She is also planning on going to the original Mineral Springs in Oakville. Did you know that?
That one I did not know.
All on the same trip. Now, the reason she wants to go to Oakville is a video that, get this, I actually saved to a DVD. When I remember I was in the Westerners with Richard Crowe. I told him what happened. And he said, can you save it? You get it on video? I said, yes, I have it on video. He said, can you get me a copy of the video? I said, sure, of course. So I brought it to the next meeting a month later, and he was in the hospital. And just a matter of a couple of days later, he passed away. So I had this copy on a DVD. So that was meant for Richard Crowe. I gave it to Ursula Belsky. And she saw it, heard the story, and said, we got to go there. The original Mineral Springs in Alton.
Yeah, Alton.
Has a white lady there, but it's also part of a mall. It is kind of a busy place. I think the original Mineral Springs is not working there. I've never been there myself. I don't know the real details. In Oakville, it's an active hotel still. The reason it's an active hotel and all the other places around it closed is because the mob met there in the 20s and 30s. It was a common meeting place for the mob in Chicago to meet up with the mob in St. Louis.
Kind of a midway point.
Yeah. And well, of course, it's much closer to St. Louis than it is to Chicago, but yeah. And they would sit there and, of course, use the baths and lounge around in this hotel. Well, there's a white lady, and the whole thing was wondering who the white lady was. They were both related by marriage to the owners of the hotel. One of the ladies was crippled with arthritis. She stayed there and was cured of her arthritis because of the mineral bath. The other one, she disappeared. She left. They don't know exactly why she ran off, but she just was gone. Her husband, again a relative of the owners of the place, built a shrine for her in a room, I believe in the basement, and just covered the walls with their photos and would go down there every night with candles so he could kind of commune with the photos and be with her. And one night he just had enough and took a shotgun with him and, took care of himself. So they were wondering if the white lady, the ghost, was her coming back looking for her husband. Well, of course, me being an investigator, I don't get to the bottom of this. I don't figure out who it was. So I'm in there. I've been investigating all night long. And one place where they gave massages, there's a bar underneath the floor in that same building. And there's not much else in that building. I had to wait until the bar closed. So I went in there back about 5 o'clock in the morning, walked in there. Of course, I'm by myself again. There's not another living soul in this building but me. So I walk in there, stand there in near darkness, just a couple of UV lights on, and I hear voices and footsteps coming down. There's a hall that go down to a couple of massage rooms and dead ends. I hear footsteps coming down that hall, or should I say up the hall toward me, and I heard voices. And I said, be right back. So I went and got another investigator. We went in there. We set up the equipment. And we're standing there, and the person I was with said, oh, my God, there's a girl that just walked in the room. So I looked up, and I'm completely frozen because I'm having my energy drained from me. She walks up to me, stands in front of me for a while, and then starts doing these step back and step up things to see if I saw her. But, of course, you know, sometimes you're in around spirits, you're paralyzed. And I was. It's like sometimes when you wake up, you have the sleep paralysis. This was an awake paralysis. I could barely move. And she was taking a step back and a step forward to see if I saw her, and we were nose to nose. And now she did not show up in IR lights, but, of course, I had a full-spectrum camera there. The person I was with handed me the camera, and said, I want to see if she wants to talk by the ghost box. So she went up and started cranking up the ghost box, trying to do a session there. In the meantime, I was realizing that she was not showing up under IR light, but you saw some of my other equipment. At this party, I have four UV spots, mini spots, just a couple of lights on a 9-volt battery. And there were two of them sitting on a table to my left. So I reached down and grabbed them and started running them up and down her body. And you can, in the video, you can see flashes of hair, flashes of face, flashes of dress as I'm running the lights up and down. She actually starts appearing a little bit under the UV light on camera, dead in front of me. I mean, I'm 5'9". She's about 5'4". But we were literally nose to nose. The other person thought she was going to kiss me. And I'm standing here doing this, and finally she starts walking away, and we sit there for about 15 minutes. All this is on video. She starts walking away and finally walks back into the doorway, then down the hallway where she came from and disappeared. Well, I'm so exhausted and drained from this, I laid down on one of the massage benches for about 15 minutes to regain my energy. And I had hardly spoken during all this time. So I got recharged, went in to the back where she disappeared, and there was a swinging door back there to a break room. And this is a swinging door without a strong spring because these are ladies that work there. And this one where, you know, a 110-pound woman can easily push it open and go into her break room and, you know, drink her Coke or eat lunch or whatever. Well, I pushed it open, got about halfway open, and it was shoved back into my face. And I am 250 pounds. The person behind me is a good 175. And we both were pushed backwards out of the door frame. That took a lot of force. So I looked at her and said, she said, "What happened?" I said, "We just got shoved backwards. Do we really want to go in there?" And, of course, I say a couple of swear words and say, yes, basically hell yes. Modify that with a few adjectives and adverbs. But I said, "We're going in." So I literally hit the door like I was Brian Urlacher. Boom. The door went backwards, wide open. We walk in. She's a bit of a psychic. She saw three mob figures sitting there. Obviously, the head guy sitting in a nice leather chair. I said, okay. Also scanned the scammer over a clock, and it was 25 minutes until 7 in the morning. And so I passed the clock, passed it over the chairs, and she said, "You think we're going to try to sit down in the nice chair?" I said, "Why not?" So she did, and the time her bare—I don't want to say her butt hit, because I'm not even sure her butt hit it. Time the material of her pants hit the chair. For the first time, the ghost box, which was way back at the office, several yards away, I heard voices coming over it. And I thought it was the first shift people coming in. I said, "Oh, I better say something to them. All my stuff's out there. I had a running camera out there." So I opened the swinging door. I said, "Is anybody out there?" And the ghost box said, "Hell yeah." And I said, and so we went running out there, and it was the ghost box. I also got that on my other camera. But when we got out front, we realized that it was daylight, and it was pitch dark when we walked out of the room. So I went running downstairs to the front desk and was telling her that I wanted to go over what had happened. And a first shift person walks in. It's 7 o'clock. What I told you was a matter of 5 to 6, 7 minutes happening. 25 minutes had passed. But yet it seemed like to us it was only 5, 6, 7 minutes, less than 10 minutes. So we were figuring we were caught in a kind of time vortex, and we lost about 15, 20 minutes of our lives. And when I got home and started looking at the video, when the one spirit was in front of me, I looked in the background. I did not see it start with. The wife actually looked over my shoulder when I was watching the video on full screen, and there's another spirit that's standing there walking back and forth looking to see what's going on, watching the other spirit talk to me. She walks back down the hallway where I can't see, it's an L-shaped hallway, out of view of the camera, and then a few minutes later walks back, and that's when the other spirit walked away to join her, and they both disappear. But you can see in the video her body and the dress moving back and forth.
Really?
And this is why Ursula Belsky wants to put the Oakerville location of the original Mineral Springs on her tour. So I can take her entire tour and put them in this same place. And anybody wants to stay up to 5 o'clock in the morning with me, is welcome to come in, just 3 or 4 people, because I found out that if you get going up with 10 or 12 people, you're going to overwhelm the ladies. They're not going to come in. I am the trigger object, because you know my knees. I have 2 arthritic knees, that need replacement. I also have arthritis in my right, in both thumbs, right and left thumbs. And I am slowly being crippled with arthritis. The knees will be replaced. That'll fix one thing, but I'll always be a little bit handicapped because of it. She was identified with me because her arthritis was healed at the mineral springs. So my investigation proved that it wasn't the lady looking for her husband all the time. The main one is the lady who married there and actually died there at the hotel. But her arthritis was cured. The other one in the back is the one looking for her husband. She's the minor spirit there. The mob spirits tried to run the ladies. And I actually yelled at the spirits, the mob spirits, that bullying, especially bullying women, will not be tolerated in life or in death. Now, that was a 2 hours, some of it sheer terror, fantastic excitement, and a lot of nervousness. Because I was actually had a spirit 20 feet away from me at the same time I had a spirit 2 inches from me. And the next morning, got up, and for some reason, when I went down and got her, she was at the pool, indoor pool there. I saw the girl at the desk walk by, and something told me to make an appointment with her for the Mineral Springs bath. So I did it, and then she went in and made an appointment for her and her husband. Her husband was in their room asleep. My wife was in our room asleep. So we made appointments for them with her. Why we did that, we don't know, because we did not go there for that reason. But we both made appointments. I don't know if someone was asking us to, pressuring us to, call it what you want. Say it a coincidence. I can't say it was paranormal. But the next morning when we were in the bath, there on the other side of the room, this is a huge section. This was a room twice the size of the upper floor of Ethel's party. That was nothing but stalls where you had a one-person hot tub in a small change area. Because you went into the locker room, got you a little robe and a towel, and you immersed yourself in nice hot water with their minerals in it. It's their natural water, so that's why they call it the original Mineral Springs. There's some underground water there.
Yeah.
So I was laying there in the tub, behind it's like kind of like a bathroom door, a bathroom stall door, had the little lock on it. The wife was in the very next stall. So I hollered at her, "I'm not alone in here." Because
and
here comes...
She said, who?
here comes the ghost that I had talked to just a few hours before, walking in just to make sure I was all right, and the fact that I was in the bath. So I looked up at her. Of course, you don't take a bath with a camera. I had absolutely no equipment. I'm looking up at her, and I thanked her for the interaction we'd had a couple hours before. And she got smiled and nodded, and I looked at her, and I said, "I'm naked? I mean, what else do you say to a female spirit when you're laying in a tub naked?" And she kind of laughed, a little smiled, turned, walked right through my robe that was hanging on the door, right through the door. And the place smelled like jasmine. And it reeked, literally. The wife just said, corrected me and said it reeked. Now, she is known to walk through there, especially on Sunday mornings, and making it, you can smell the jasmine and say, "Oh, okay, she just walked through." But this time it reeked. The other girl I was with down there came running out. I was telling the attendant about this. She comes running out. What cleaner did you use? Well, I don't know what air freshener, what cleaner you would use to clean this place. I want to buy it because it smells fantastic. She said, "You're my first customer this morning. I have not cleaned, sprayed anything." And then she went on to explain that when the white lady appears down in the locker room, there's also a child that runs through. It sometimes locks the doors on people. But when she appears, the place you start getting these whiffs of jasmine, but she said she'd never smelled it as strong as it was, mainly because she just didn't walk through. She actually visited me in my bath and responded to what I said to her. I have no proof of that because, like I said, you don't carry equipment into the bathtub with you. But this is explaining why Ursula wants to include the Okraville Original Mineral Springs in her tour.
Because no, I'm really, really hoping that I can get on that tour if I get the time off work. I mean, I know for a fact I'll be at Camp Douglas. I'll be at pretty much everything else. It's just the out-of-state stuff that gets a little hard.
Right. But of course, all this, it's in Illinois, but it is the other side of the state. It's to the south. These both places are about, how far? About 30, the wife just said 35 miles east of St. Louis.
Yeah.
Yeah, going down I-64. These places are only about 25 miles apart.
Yeah, the other person I was talking to about it, too, is, I was talking to her last night about it, is, well, mind you, I have to say that if you want to call it a unknown radio network trooper, I did Into the Darkness Monday night with Brittany.
Right.
I did Terrify Radio last night with Kevin and Jody. And
right.
Tonight doing our show. But, Jody actually lives in St. Louis, so I was talking to her about it. So hopefully, we can Jody be able to join us on that one too.
Yeah, it'd be nice if she could just, you know, when we go to St. Louis, at least get in her own car and follow us back to the two Mineral Springs locations.
Yeah,
and these two places have the same name. They both call themselves the Original Mineral Springs.
Yeah,
but they're in two towns about 25-30 miles apart. And both of them have white ladies. Now, the other place, Dalton, I've never been to. That would be a new experience for me also. But the one in Okraville, I've had more. Most of the other people have just gotten a blur, you know, an image at a window, or just smelled a little bit of jasmine. I have been face-to-face with her. I have spoken to her. Apparently, she also... Gail, my wife swears she follows here. She bought some of the minerals. You know, after they boil the water, the minerals are left there.
Yeah.
She bought a package of the minerals that's in their water. And when she set it on the table after we got here, she smelled jasmine for a few minutes. So and we have nothing that smells like jasmine in the house. Nothing. So it's our theory that she actually followed us home to make sure I was okay. So apparently with her, I am the trigger object. And I don't have a problem taking a few people off a tour, putting them in that room, and using myself as a trigger object to see if I can contact her. I don't have a problem. If she wants to talk to me again in front of two, three, four other people, she will.
Yeah. Hey, real quick. I know we're starting to run down. We got just about 6 minutes left.
Right.
If you wanna repub or pub any other websites or anything you can think of.
Well, all I want to do is just pump myself on Facebook, Len Dorman, L-E-N. Then it's, of course, the space Dorman, D-R-M-A-N. You need to just get on there and make sure. Now with Camp Douglas, it is April the 13th. And right now it's about 40 degrees cooler than it was at this time last year. So I'm not sure I can pull it off on this date. If it's windy, if it's raining, or if it's really too cold to stand out there outside all night long, I will move it to April the 20th. My permit is good till May 15th. I don't want to put it off that long. People say, why are you why don't you put it off to the end of April? I would feel really bad if I waited, what's the last day in April? If I waited till April 27th, and it was raining that day, and where April 13th was a beautiful, sunny, 70-degree day. I would have felt really bad about putting it off again until May. This time, I'm either going to do it on the 13th, I can do it the 20th, I can do it the 27th, I can even do it on May the 4th. I'm trying to do it as early as possible, because the permit for City Cemetery is only good until June 15th. And if somebody comes to both events, brings a DVR, we are going to have generators, by the way, at Camp Douglas. We can set the generators well away from the actual site where people will be investigating so the noise won't bother them, and set up the DVRs and then run their cameras out. A lot of it will be handheld, so that would be the best ticket, is actually use your handheld cameras. But where was I going with that? Oh, yeah, the timing. If you've got a DVR and you've got six cameras on your DVR and you have those things running from 9 at night to 6 in the morning, that is 9 hours multiplied by each camera. And that's a lot of video to look through. And if you've got three or four audio recorders, and you've got them on for 9 hours, so you got three, that's 9 times 3, that's 27 hours of audio.
And I believe that you'll agree with me when you call it 30 with going back, rewinding, re-listening, re-watching.
Yes. But I'm saying that is a minimal, just to watch the videos that's playing will take that long. And that's a lot of stuff to do. And if somebody comes back wanting to do it again 2 weeks later, even 2 weeks later, that's a lot of stuff to review and save. So I'd rather have these events 3 to 4 weeks apart to give people some review time.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm trying to do it on the 13th. That's the explanations there. But just look at my Facebook page, and when I announce, which I probably will in the next week or so, the date, the hard date for the City Cemetery. Again, if it's raining or extremely windy, we'll delay that 1 week.
Well, then lock me in for it, because you know I'll be there.
Oh well, I will. We'll need you there, because you're a great investigator. You know how it's done. You don't do all this TV junk, which is not the way to investigate. You do it the real way.
Shut up,
Dennis. It cracks me up to hear him reference it as TV junk. Yeah, that I can't agree more.
And that's
just... Don't feel like a little girl and run.
Or yell, hey, dude, every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Hey, bro. Yeah. Hey, dude. Hey, bro. But, hey, in the last minute and a half, we can still talk and archive. That's not a big deal. But I just want to say thank you, Len. You know for 100% fact that I'll be there. Thank you, Dennis. Thank you for everybody listening. It means a ton to us. We keep getting more listeners every week, and that's, you know, phenomenal. So in the minute and a half of actual show, I just want to get out there and just say thank you, everybody. And, it's definitely something I'm looking forward to, and I appreciate the respect, Len. It means a lot to me that you would, you know, say it's not the TV style investigation, and I'm gonna start quoting that. I'm actually gonna start bringing that up.
Well, I give you permission to use that. Thank you for having me. Thank you to all your listeners for listening to me. I hope I was entertaining.
And
definitely,
Dennis,
enjoyed it. Thank you very much, Les.
You're welcome.
Yeah, Dennis, pump your plugs out real quick, because we got 36 seconds left.
All right. Well, what we're hoping to do next week, folks, here on Full Spectrum Radio, we're hoping to do an educational employee dedicated show.
if you're a bus driver that deals with the education system, if you're a school teacher, if you're a retired school teacher, school administrator, staff, or any of the above, get in touch with either CPR Matt, CPR Dennis, let us know. We'd love to have you on the show. Also, the following week, we're hoping to have a group called PM Investigations on. You can find them on Facebook under Houston Ghosts. They couldn't get PM Investigations. It was already taken. But we're hoping to have them on the following week. So next week, if you're an educator, by all means, join us. Otherwise, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Lynn, thank you. It was definitely enthralling. And I've got some places I'm going to send some information your way and see what you can scrounge up for me.
Will do. Help you quick.
Now that we're an archive, I wish I could have popped this in too, but Lynn, you are seriously a staple and somebody that should be studied in the amount of information that you retain.
Well, believe this or not, I don't even have a note card in front of me.
I know.
Everything tonight was ad lib. I just went off with it. I do that on every radio show. I think it sounds more fun and more interesting if I'm telling it out of the brain rather than reading a script. Because when you read a script, you can tell you're reading a script.
Yeah, and Dennis, what did I tell you about Len before the show?
Oh, yeah. Just a wealth of knowledge, and it's amazing what all he knows.
You want to know a little bit about Baxter's Grove. Let me tell you a little story about that one. You're still archiving, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We got an extra hour before it cuts us off and it'll hang up on us.
All right. At Baxter's Grove, several times. Now, as you know, I've investigated the Senator Humphrey House down in Orland Park several times. This come about just before the first time I investigated the Senator Humphrey House. It's in Baxter's Grove, and Matt, you know about where I'm talking about. When you first walk in the gate, turn to the path on your left and walk all the way to the back fence.
Yeah.
That's where Nora, the headstone is. When you're facing the Nora headstone, to your left is usually kind of grown up because there are no headstones there. And in fact, in the maps of the graves, there's no graves there. But several times, remember what I said about the little girl at Ethel's party?
Yes.
If I've taught myself over the years to see temperature variations in the air. Like right now, I've got a ceiling fan going in this room, and I can concentrate and try to focus on something that's halfway between me and the background object. You know, be it the wall or a piece of furniture or something. And in here, of course, all the air is in motion because there's a ceiling fan on. It's stirring the air.
You've got to teach me that one.
Well, it gives you a headache, I warn you. If you do it for very long. In fact, I'm stopping doing it now before I get one. But I was standing out there and felt a presence. And started looking, and I could see this moving air, where there was no moving air, walking toward me. And it's vaguely human-shaped. And, of course, I tried to speak to her. And the only feeling I got was relation to an old story about the Senator Humphrey House. Senator Humphrey had a child born to his wife, his first wife, that died shortly after birth. And his first wife died shortly after. Ursula can really tell you the background of this story. She knows it much better than I do. And shortly after the child's death, she died. Senator Humphrey did not want his child buried in his family plot in Orland Cemetery, Orland Park Cemetery. Why? Don't know. She ended up being buried at Bachelor's Grove. When his wife died, she was buried in this. By the way, her family had a plot at Bachelor's Grove, so she was buried in a family plot at Bachelor's Grove. when she died, she was buried in Orland Park. And about 30 days later, the senator, who had had an affair for several years with his secretary, married his secretary. And it's always thought that he, not wanting a child from his wife, first wife, may have, and I say may, because there's no proof, killed the baby and then killed her. Ursula can tell you more about this. She knows the story. She says it's a very, very sad affair. My theory is that in the evening, just before dark, she comes into when you walk in the gate to the far left corner, front corner. She walks from Orland Park, because that's the direction Orland Park is, and walks in that cemetery looking for her child. If she's not looking for her, she's looking to spend time with the child. Because, as you know, a baby that dies, you don't, and especially if the mother passes away, you do not separate mother and child. There's that bond there. Could that bond be strong enough to bring her spirit from Orland Park Cemetery to Bachelor's Grove so she could spend time with her child? I could see the heat signature. I videoed it with a camera. And this is the strangest thing. I've talked to camera experts about this, and they said this is impossible. That you could watch the video on the camera. It played perfectly, beginning to end. But, of course, on a tiny little 1.5 by 1 screen, you can't see a whole lot.
Yeah.
But the video, even with other stuff on the camera, everything else downloaded off the camera except this one video. I could not download the video using the wires off the camera. I could not download it through a card reader, pulling the card out of the camera, putting it in a card reader. It would not download, but would play perfectly on the camera. And people tell me, that can't be. There's nothing you can do to a video to make it do that. And I said, well, you know, this happened. Finally, the video got erased off the camera, and I'm still using the same card, and I filled it up, and I've never had any other problems with it. That as far as downloading or uploading anything. On December 22nd, during Ursula's little Christmas event, I was down there wanting to see if she was going to appear, and she did, stronger than ever. The heat coming off, making the air move, looked like I had a heater placed on the ground, heating the air, and there was a column of hot air coming off the ground. Now, on December 22nd, there's no plant growth there. Now, sometimes during the summer, especially in the evening time, it starts to cool off, you will have heat coming off the plants. And you've just got, like in this room, where all you see is air moving. That's what you have there. You have the heat coming off the plants. But on December 22nd, there's no plants there. I can see this column of heated air moving. And she seemed in a happier spirit, like the whole place did. The whole attitude of Bachelor's Grove changed when we put wreaths on the graves and put a little votive light, looked like a votive candle, on the headstones. The whole place changed. It was like, you know, having Christmas in somebody's house. The whole spirit changed. She appeared before me, and I got it on video. And she allowed me to be able to download the video this time. She didn't affect my camera. And I've actually got that on YouTube.
Really?
And I called it a ghost encounter at Bachelor's Grove.
Yeah, I'm convinced that they are definitely able to affect our electronics.
Well, there's no doubt.
Not just draining the energy.
This is the weirdest thing that people tell me that work on cameras. That's impossible. Because if you've got a video corrupted, it's not going to play on the camera. And it, of course, it's not going to download because your computer is going to pick up, okay, this is corrupted, and stop playing, stop downloading. But this just refused to download. But would play on the camera. And people tell me, camera experts tell me that's impossible.
Yeah, I've had things happen with mine that, you know, just can't be explained.
And this is one
I
of
them. Understand. Yeah, I mean, I can understand the camera shutting down.
I've had that happen.
Starting back up. Yeah, that, you know, that's easy to understand. I can even understand it starting back up. But starting back up and then going back into record mode by itself with nobody near it, that's one that I can't understand, and I've had it happen to my camera.
I've had that happen 2 or 3 times at Bachelor's Grove. Where the camera, I set the camera up, turn it on, it runs for 2 or 3 minutes, stops, and cranks back up in record mode.
Yeah.
Which that camera does not do.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to press a separate button to get it to go back into record mode. And I've had mine do it. And, you know, 2 minutes of video are missing. I had it set up on a static tripod watching a hallway. And I can see the rest of my team on the other end of the hallway, and I'm upstairs. You actually see me come down a little bit later from upstairs. But the camera shut off. About 2 minutes, the way it looks from what I can piece together from the questioning and so forth, backed up against the audio recorders and, you know, the rest of the team saying, well, this is what I think we were doing. But I can still, you know, I've got 2 audio recorders going at that one location. And there's about 2 minutes of video missing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it started back up and went back into record.
I had one at the Senator Humphrey House. You ever been there, Matt?
No, I haven't been there yet.
Okay, I was on the second floor, and I was with Ed Shanahan, and we walked into a room where, if you stand in front of it's where the kids used to play, and if you stand in front of this certain window, you can actually feel the kids, you know, giving one of those little playful pushes, like they're going to push you out the window. But it's not enough to push a person out of the window. It's kind of just the kids playing around. I walked in there, and there was 3 or 4 people in front of me. There was a narrow aisleway where only one person could go at a time, no side-by-sides. There's 3 people in front of me and 2 behind me. And the people behind me gasped, and then everybody else in front of me gasped. And the reason they did that is because if I had, like, some refrigerated air go right through me. And this was, I think, during the summer. It was fairly warm. And I had this ice-cold air just go through me for a second. And I was one of about 6 or 7 people who felt it. At the very second that icy air went through me, my camera shut down. And it had a near fully charged battery. Started the camera back up. She ran for 2.5 hours flawlessly. Then Edward Shanahan started his power circle, and the camera shut down again. I started it back up, and I realized that the battery was getting a tad low, but I still had about 1/4 to 1/3 charge left on the battery. And I said, okay, enough's enough. And I went and put a fully charged battery pack in it. Well, I started taping, and all of a sudden the camera went, shh, I could hear it. And the video went out for about 1/4 of a second, like something tried to interfere with the camera. But the battery was a little bit too strong for them to shut it to break the electrical connection, because the way I think they do that is not physically push the button. They just cut the power off. And, of course, when the power's cut off, even for a millisecond, that'll shut your camera down. So it looked like something tried to interfere with that, and it just wasn't quite strong enough to cut the camera off. It just caused an audible sound, and a you know, like there was no channel, like on your TV. just a quarter of a second of snow on the in the viewfinder, and then it played fine the rest of the night. Now, I was talking, again, video camera experts, and they say, I don't know what the hell could have caused snow on a camera screen for even a quarter of a second, and the camera not be malfunctioning and go right back in record mode. Just kept on going.
Yeah.
That's weird.
You know, mine was crystal clear video right up to that point, and it just and it didn't power down, you know, like a slow fade out or anything. It just instantly stopped.
Right. That's what I'm thinking. I think a spirit can get in there, because remember, the theory is they're electrical charged.
Yeah.
And if you're made of an electrical charged being, it's nothing. It wouldn't be too much trouble to go in there and short circuit something.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's what they're doing, causing a split second short, and of course your camera shuts off.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened with mine. And
because
then,
you remember the theory that the brain works on electricity. That's why our whole body works on electricity. That's why they can if you get an electrical shock, to some of it will kill you. Too much of it, enough electricity will at least knock you out, because it interferes with all your electrical impulses in your body. So, of course, you go unconscious. And to revive somebody, what do? You shock them.
Yeah,
you put a little paddle on their chest and throw an electric volt in there, and it restarts your heart. The theory is the brain's all electrical stuff. They don't really understand how it works, but they know it's electricity, a form of electricity. Now, you know that you cannot destroy matter. Even when wood is burned, the matter is turned into heat. Heat is a form of matter. It's just heat. And you cannot destroy energy, which is a form of matter. You cannot destroy matter. So where does that electrical impulse go when you die? It's energy, a form of matter. It cannot be destroyed. Where does it go? And this is simple physics.
Yeah.
Where's it go?
Got to go somewhere.
It's got to go somewhere.
That's been one of my statements for the longest time. You can't destroy energy. You can manipulate it. You can relocate it. You can alter it, but you can't destroy it. It's constant.
Right. Some spirits, that electrical energy, they move on to one place or the other, depending on your religious beliefs. Others, by choice, or maybe by non-choice, they stick around. Whatever they go through to move on, they don't go through it, and they're here on Earth. I think it's a minority of the total number of spirits. Most move on. Some don't. Some, and I think this goes back, I'm not sure if it's IQ-based or what, but some are stronger than others. Some can manifest as a shadow figure. Maybe they were maybe a darker figure before. Some are totally invisible. Some are more powerful than others and can manipulate things, like cameras. Some of them can't. If they appear at all, it's a little ball of light going past your camera. And that's all they can do. Could it be the level of energy they had in their brain, and that's all the energy they have available in the afterlife?
Yeah.
Now the other question is
definitely not an orb person.
What I talk about, an orb to me is what you catch on a still camera, and 99% of it is a reflection, refraction, or something, mainly caused by the flash being too close to the camera lens. The reason you're seeing so many orb shots is your cell phone cameras and your little tiny pocket shoots, because, you know, you're talking about a camera the size of a credit card. So, of course, the lens and the flash are nearly side by side. The closer your flash is to your lens, the more orbs you're going to have. And
yeah,
I've seen cameras.
Also, even instead in video, like if you have a remote, you know, IR camera, or remote IR full spectrum, and anything glows in front of it, it doesn't matter what the hell it is, it still gives reflection. So that's why
exactly.
I will never I will never look at a picture of an orb and be like, well, yep, that is a spirit.
On video, I call them light anomalies because you can't call them an orb because an orb to me is round and may not have a whole lot of movement. A light anomaly, something to me, is when it gets close enough to the camera and you can see that it doesn't have legs. You can see that it's moving against the breeze. Maybe you can see some dust particles moving around, and it's moving the opposite way. It's moving too fast for a dust particle and has a distinct tail. It's going by its own light and has a tail that can be anywhere from an inch to several inches long. That I call light anomalies. I'm not saying it's paranormal, but that's just what I call a light anomaly. It's something to look at. It's not proof of the paranormal, but it's not something you get every day.
It's definitely something to make you look at and go, what the hell was that? Because the same location where my camera shut off, once it restarted, probably 10, 15 minutes later into the video, it was myself and one other investigator came around the corner about 6 feet away from the camera, walked towards the camera, and about 2 seconds behind us, you see this little, like, ball of light. It's just a little light anomaly, comes around that corner and turns the same exact path that we had just taken.
Wow.
And it's 5-10 seconds behind us. So it's not like it was dust trailing off of us that it, you know, just happened to illuminate in the IR.
I have seen dust particles following people, and they're usually right behind the person.
Yeah,
and a person can walk through a dust area, and when they go out of the video frame, you can see dust for about 10 or 15 seconds following their path, just being sucked along by the vacuum of the moving body.
Right. And that's why this one intrigued me so much, because it was probably close to a full minute behind us.
But that
came around the corner. Yeah, I mean, it came around the corner. It turned that corner. It came out of the little short hallway we had just come out of. Turned that corner and took the exact same path that we had. So my first thought was, okay, well, it's a dust trail behind us. And then I spotted another one that came from, well, that corner kind of splits off. You go around the corner and you go into a short hallway, or you can just kind of take a slight jog to the side and you'll go up the steps. There's one that looks like it's coming down the steps, and then this one comes around that corner.
Where was this?
If I can, it's a location that I'm not allowed to disclose.
Okay.
But I kind of use it as my training grounds for my team.
Okay.
I've got some very nasty EVPs out of this location. I actually got choked in this location, and I've got EVP to prove that that was the intent. The EVP actually says, choke that effort. And I started into a coughing fit. 5-8 seconds after that, you hear the same voice kind of yell, get a grip. So, you know, it's kind of funny. That same exact room on another investigation, different team, once I started CPR East, I took the new team that I formed into that same room. I went upstairs, left three members of the team in that room with two recorders going. They were in there for 10 to 15 minutes, didn't get a thing. I stayed upstairs so I could do a quick jump in here on the radio program. We actually did a Wednesday night investigation. When I rejoined the team, I sent two of them upstairs, and myself and one other investigator went into that room. I start the recorder, I set it down. The investigator that's with me, Corey, says, all right, well, you didn't do anything while we were in here earlier. Now Dennis is here. What do you got to say? And I've got a beautiful EVP that says, effer, I want to fight. Why is he going to call me an effer every time? So I don't think I made a friend. But it was coming out of that little short hallway, that little ball of light, that, you know, the light anomaly followed us around that corner. So,
well, you see why I call them light anomalies.
Yeah,
because
I mean,
I like to call the still ones orbs. And it's not just a floating balloon ball. It's usually got a tail, and it's usually moving pretty fast. How fast did Jaws move? Did, I mean, was it really fleeting, or was it just kind of slow motion?
No, it was. This one was definitely moving. And it wasn't in the direct light of the IR lights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was kind of off to the side of the camera. Like, where I had the camera set up was at the end of the hallway, off to the side, so it didn't get kicked or, you know, anything like that. So it's up against, if you think about looking from the camera view, it's up against the right-hand wall. This thing came out of a short hallway to the left about 6-8 feet ahead, turned and came down that hallway towards the camera, but stayed to the left-hand side of the hallway, like opposite where the camera was.
Hmm.
Now, I'll clip that video out, and I'll send it to you, but it's definitely an interesting one to watch, man. It's pretty intriguing.
I've got to get mine on YouTube. I'm just trying to figure out how to put it together. Matt, have you ever done the Irish legend?
The Irish legend?
Yes.
No,
down south in Archer.
No, I haven't done that one.
You haven't been there?
We did, what's the other one? Oh, God, there's like 10 on that road.
Yes, but that, well, if you go all the way down Archer, you actually need to start at Ethel's Party, because we're only talking about a place that's just a few blocks from Archer. And then you start there and go down a few miles, then all of a sudden you just got places just grouped together on the south end of Archer. So, yeah, there's a couple of bars there. But the Irish Legend, a really nice place. I was investigating with Edward Shanahan. By the way, I do have the utmost respect for Andy Edward Shanahan. There's people that talk bad about him. I think he's a good man.
Yeah, I do.
But anyway, I was up there with him, and I was up there with Frank Heiberger. He left me alone again. He went into another room that upstairs in the Irish Legend used to be a brothel. It's now an apartment. So there's a bathroom there, and there is a closet, a big walk-through closet, and I say walk-through because there's a door there that went into the bedroom. Well, Edward and Frank, with a few other people, went into the bedroom. I stay in the bathroom to investigate the bathroom. I shut the door, cut off the lights, and was there with a full spectrum with Meyer lighting. Walked into the closet, that the other door was closed where they were, and I'm just shooting around just to see what I could catch. And I can see it in the viewfinder, and it's on video, a light anomaly running across the ceiling in a very slight zigzag manner. It appeared and disappeared. And if it was a bug or something reflecting the light, it appeared out of nowhere and disappeared with still being hit with IR light. I turn around, and there's some towels stacked there, and I'm just seeing if anything appears. And another light anomaly, and I can see this on the screen. I was older than cameras, just a handheld, full-spectrum camera. I saw my left hand there. I was just kind of leaning against the wall. And the light anomaly traveled for a foot or two and flies into my left fingers and disappears. Well, I actually had an attachment for about 6 weeks after that. Remember, this was a brothel. This closet running between the bedroom and the bathroom was rumored to be where, if the prostitutes got pregnant, they had abortions. What got attached to me was a prostitute from the 20s and 30s, or 30s, I think I'm thinking around late 1928, 29, got attached to me. as a succubus. And for many nights, for about 6 weeks, till I finally got rid of it, I'd wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and a spirit is having sex with me. Several times in the bed with my wife. And I wake up, and I'm having sex with a ghost.
See, that's something not many people would admit to, because, you know, there's those guys that run around with that little hug me coat that
yeah.
might want to talk to you about this.
Of course, I'm not like Zach Bagans from Ghost Adventures. It was not an incubus. If
yeah.
you remember, he
yeah.
got that wrong.
Yeah. And I
this was a succubus. Definitely female.
I laughed pretty hysterically on that one.
That was hysterical. And he's brought it up a couple of times after that. You know, people have kidded him. They probably still do about the incubus, succubus thing. This was definitely female. And finally, what I had to do was gross her out. And she left. I was actually spending the night at Frank Heiberger's old apartment. He's moved out since then. And it was an apartment complex. And I said, okay, I am tired of being woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning like this. So I grossed her out. I'm not going to explain how. But I felt her leave. I said, okay, good, that's done. Now maybe I can get a little bit of sleep before I have to wake up in an hour. Because we were supposed to get up early that morning and do some stuff. I forget why. I think it was evidence review or something. But that was interesting, to say the least. Of course, it's a thing a lot of guys wouldn't complain about.
Yeah, well,
there's worse things that could happen.
Yes, it could. Well, never mind.
There's a lot of paths the three of us could walk down here at this time, and we're all choosing not to.
Yes.
Oh, and on Light Anomalies, there's a girl named Anna who works with Frank Heiberger. She's a member of his new group he's forming. He's supposed to be designing some new equipment from a little bit different point of view. Some equipment, and you know what I'm talking about, Matt, is out there that people put out and just use for the thrill seekers. It doesn't really have any scientific evidence behind it that it works. People put it out there to sell something. Frank is going as an investigator and designing something that works on the current theory of how spirits work. So it's going to be some radical stuff. It's a little bit different theory than what's out there, but in the next few months he should be coming out with this. But anyway, Anna works with him. She's a little bit of a sensitive. She's the one that said it at Ethel's party. She come up and said,
yeah.
I feel a female presence. When I was with the Midnight Paranormal Society, Dave's group, we used to have monthly meetings at Ethel's. Remember the little ante room at the front door? We met out there. And I handed her one of my full spectrum handheld cameras and told her and another girl member just to go in the ladies' room because the bar's wide open. I can't go in the ladies' room. Well, I could, but I'd probably get in trouble. But ask her to go back in the ladies' room and stay in there for a while in the dark, just filming, see if she'd catch anything. So she did it. She went back there and just held the camera using just IR light. And she came back and said she thought she caught something. So I blew it up, of course, on full screen. And she was pointed toward, of course, there's only one female stall in that bathroom. And the door was open. This light anomaly comes out of the wall, the side wall, but right behind it, right above the toilet, flies straight, gets in about the center of the door, stops, hovers there for a second, and then spirals. And I don't mean zigzag, I meant spirals, right toward her and goes right into the lens of the camera and disappears. Now explain that. If it was a bug, the bug disappeared in front of the lens. And the way the camera was focusing, you could have counted the legs of the bug when it was 10, 12 feet away. Because I've seen bugs. I've done about enough outside investigations with the same camera and had bugs flying in front of me. And I picked out bugs 20 feet away, by almost as far as the light reached.
Yeah.
And being able to count the legs of the bug and see the wings fluttering. They don't show up as a light anomaly. You can see wings, you can see legs. Dust does not spiral. Dust does not change directions. Dust rarely sits there and hovers for a couple of seconds. And I've never seen a piece of dust spiral. And again, where did the piece of dust go? Unless it's stuck to the lens of the camera. But again, I've never seen, what's the coincidence of one seeing one speck of dust and it flies into the lens of the camera? And to say nothing of the spiraling. I've never seen dust come out of a wall, move across the room, stop, hover, then spiral. I've never seen a piece of dust do that. And I've got that on video. Actually, that remained with Anna since she took it. And that was recently reposted. I think Anna has control of that video. Anna and Frank.
I hate to cut this, but I've got a bug out. You gentlemen are more than welcome to continue, and if I know Matt, it probably will, but I have got a early morning to deal with, and
I can understand that.
Paperwork.
Before you go, one advantage I have, due to the arthritis in the knees, I cannot work. To me, the paranormal is a full-time job.
Yeah.
Which is why I can do things.
If I get to that point, that I'll be in the same exact boat, believe me.
So I can certainly understand you having a job and having to do things. It's been fantastic talking to you. I look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate it, Lynn. Definitely want to thank you for taking the time to come on the program with us. And you know, like I said, I'm going to send some of the information, like the name of the cemetery that I've got here in Richmond, just for your own entertainment, I guess.
I appreciate it.
But it's definitely fascinating information out of that location. And, you know, some of what I've discovered just made me scratch my head and go, what the hell?
Have you spent the night there yet?
No, we have not done a night investigation, but here's a neat little trick. Because it's open to the public cemetery and it's off the beaten path and it's fully dark at night, we have the concern, of course, of somebody wandering into the cemetery, you know, teenagers trying to find a place to go park or party or whatever. The team that I've formed has two active law enforcement officers. Both have take-home police cars. It has a retired local police officer that then became a federal police officer and now is just in the civilian world. But we've decided that we're going to utilize the take-home police cars to block the entryway. Park the patrol car out there to...
Yeah, exactly.
Keep
beautiful.
Our property.
Beautiful. Beautiful, because no kids are going to try to find anything going on in a place, parking or just roaming or whatever, where they see a police car. They see the police car,
exactly.
They're gone.
Next place. And
yeah,
you know, and
we definitely need that. I don't know if Ray Johnson still has any friends or not that we could utilize. But... yeah, some of the places are a little bit sketchy that we go.
Well, Baxter's Grove you can get into because that's park. That's a forest preserve.
Yeah, right.
And the forest preserve police will get you, and they can get you because you've got to walk across forest preserve property to get to the cemetery, and you've got to walk across forest preserve to get out, which means you've got to get in forest preserve, and you're not supposed to be there. So they can get you coming and going.
Yeah, and Cook County does not mess around at all.
No, they don't. They don't play games.
They want their money.
Yeah.
Well, you better move on, or we'll be on here all night.
Well, I've got my team just waiting on a little bit warmer weather.
Of course.
We're planning on doing the overnight. But I think it'll be pretty damn fascinating. And, of course, I'll keep you posted.
Okay, do that.
But, gentlemen, you have a wonderful night.
You too.
Thanks again, Lynn. And I'm out of here.
All right, good night.
You too, Jonas. Thank you. Yeah, it's always a pleasure. I mean, every Wednesday I get to make fun of you and talk with you. So, vice versa, too.
Okay, Matt, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, one thing I want to tell you about Archer Woods. If you go to my, if you look me up on YouTube, I actually shot kind of a documentary-type thing talking about Archer Woods, showing it during the daytime.
Yeah.
Because Edward Shanahan, for one, he thought the place was abandoned because there were, the office there was just piled with old junky equipment. There's always a old Coke machine. I said, oh, you know, my gosh, to have that old Coke machine would be worth it. But, of course, I wasn't going to break in there and try to steal a 500-pound Coke machine. But Archer Woods is now an active cemetery. The people who had it before have now come back into it and being active. And there are funeral homes that are having burials out there. So it is back in actively used cemetery. It's actively maintained, and they're trying to redo the flooding out there that occurs when it pours down rain, because the lower areas was almost an ankle-deep pond. So they're trying to remedy that situation. And there are actively people being buried there, so it's not appeared to be, say, a year ago, an abandoned cemetery. So I'm glad to say that it's being maintained now. And by the way, this is off the record, but I'm probably the only person who can tell you that I have not spent not one but two nights in that cemetery.
Really?
Yep.
Well,
stay there until dawn.
Off the record, but on the radio show. In archive, so it's not.
Yes.
We're not live, so it's good.
Right. But the partner I was with the second time, one was by myself. Second time was with somebody, and he got about 5 years scared out of his life. Well, we were about 100 yards apart in the cemetery, and he heard a noise and looked up, and a white horse was walking through the cemetery.
What?
Yes. Have you ever been to Archer Woods?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's stables across the street.
Yeah.
Well, at a bar. What we did, we parked the car down at the bar and walked up the road just to make sure a cop wasn't sitting across the way in the, again, Forest Preserve area. Sometimes they'll park in that drive. So we saw nobody was sitting there, and then walked back to the cemetery. But, I was about 100 yards away, and I told him not to use flash photography because people in the surrounding houses, and there are houses around two sides of that cemetery, will call the police.
Yeah.
So he starts using flash photography. So I can't say I'll run because I cannot run, but it was a pretty darn fast trot because I was wondering what he was doing. A little bit, of course, your nerves are on edge when you're in a cemetery at 3 o'clock in the morning anyway. But I probably ran faster than I have in a long time, and probably be a long time before I ever go that fast again, and ask him what the hell he was doing. A few adjectives and adverbs at it. He said, there was a horse in here. I said, you kidding me? So I kept on looking where he was pointing, And sure enough, there was a horse walking through the cemetery. He walked to the back of the cemetery, but out of our sight. And then about 5 minutes later, came walking back by. So I had, as soon as it got sunrise up there, we started packing up. I went to go get the car. Left him there with the equipment to watch it. And went the stable. I had to walk by the stables to go to the car. So I go to the stables. He called a man there, maintenance guy. And I said, "Do you have a white horse here?" He said, "Sure do." There he is right there. And there he was. They had a large, common stable area. And there he was, white horse. He's a one-eyed white horse. No black, no spots on him, pure white horse. I said, "Did he get out last night?" He said, "You wouldn't believe this, but kids were in riding the horses yesterday evening, last night, and left the gate unlatched. And these horses, when they leave the gate unlatched, know that they can push the gate open and get out. And this horse pushed the gate, got out, came over to the cemetery, walked around a little bit, scared the hell out of the two of us, and went back to the stall."
So it wasn't a phantom horse. It was physical, live, breathing horse.
Yes. Scared the hell out of both of us, being white. And if it had been a black horse, we'd have had trouble seeing. We'd have heard it, wondering what was going on. Been a brown horse, about the same thing. Had been a paint with some white on, we might have figured it out. But being a white horse, we could see him. And, of course, when you hit him with a flash photography, he got a pretty good picture of a horse. And, of course, when I came up with a stronger IR lighting, I could look in the camera, "Oh, horse." And, of course, if you remember the things that are allegedly seen at Archwood, of the old horse-drawn hearse with no driver comes charging in there, and the weeping woman that you can only see on your way out, not on the way in.
Yeah.
And we were wondering, okay, is this one of the horses off that hearse? But it wasn't. It was a real live horse. And, by the way, I've never seen the horse-drawn hearse or heard a weeping woman, or seen one. Now, what I have heard there, especially after it rains, is a creek running along two sides of the cemetery, between the cemetery and the houses. And, of course, during a rain, that creek kind of floods into the cemetery. And what you have, there are thousands of those little tiny frogs that hatch out, and, of course, they're all looking to mate. So it's just solid frog call all night long. And this can be mistaken for a weeping woman if you don't know the creeks back there.
Yeah.
Because you got to kind of walk over there. If you've been there, when you go in the front gate, you're kind of on a slight rise. If you look to your right, then it goes down. That's where the pond forms when it floods over. And you can see a little bit of the houses there, and there's a little bit of creek there. Then it's toward further in the back, the creek, you got to go kind of up another hill, and the creek's at the other side of the hill. So you can't see the creek at all when you first walk in the cemetery. So anybody who does not know the creek's there and doesn't go there immediately after the rain may not hear anything. But if you go in there at night when the creek's been running a little bit, in the midst of rain, those little rain frogs come out and just make a hell of a noise. So this could be mistaken for a sobbing woman. So it could be what they're hearing. Now, the explanations for the hearse driving madly with, six horses, I think, and no driver, I have no explanation for anybody seeing that unless they've hit the opium or something. I don't know. But the experiences I've had there, of course, are presences. You can feel the heaviness. You know you're not alone, especially when I was in there alone. That was rather unnerving. During the daytime, however, I was standing in front of one of the tombs there, and I heard a woman whisper in my right ear. I was there with several. I was with Midnight Paranormal Society, and several people were there with me, and I thought I heard just somebody speaking because there was two or three girls with us, and I thought one of them was talking to somebody. And I just heard just a couple of words from them. So I immediately started looking around and realized that the closest people were a good 70 yards away, and to my left, where I heard this voice, in my right. There was nobody to my right in the cemetery. Everybody was either to my left or behind me. And the ones behind me were a good 100 yards away. So something whispered in my ear. But again, I have no proof of that. I've put recorders out there since. I've videoed that area since. And I've never caught anything in there. But
yeah,
you know something's
well,
there because you had that not alone feeling in there, even during the day. Huh?
The one place that I definitely, well, I've investigated a few times, but I've been talking to Ursula about, and she's dying to get up there. And Len, seriously, of all the places I've been, like in, you know, insane asylums throughout the country and just private residence, stuff like that, this place is the number one haunted location I've ever experienced.
What place is this now?
It's a private residence in...
Okay, your training ground.
Well, not my training ground.
Yeah, but I mean...
Dennis has a place that he brings everybody. Well, for me, if it was my training ground, it'd be a hell of a lot closer.
yeah.
But no, it's about 2.5 to 3 hours away. It's in Eden, Wisconsin, which is just outside of Fond du Lac.
Okay.
This place is the most haunted place I've ever been.
Wow.
And luckily, private residence, but at the same time, I have 24/7 access to it. So, I think, and I've been talking to Ursula about it. Ursula really, 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 really wants to get up there. So, I was thinking we take, you know, the best of the best out of Chicago, and we do a little bus trip up there. Because in the town of Fond du Lac, which is 10 miles outside of Eden, where, you know, this house is the Ramada. Right across the street from that, there's a couple bars that have connecting tunnels. And the Ramada, I think it's the fourth floor, if I remember right. It's been a while since I've looked it up, but yeah, I already talked to the general manager of the Ramada. We can have the whole haunted floor, investigate, sleep there with all our equipment rolling, and they'll pretty much clear the hotel, like one floor above and one floor below, so there's no contamination.
Well, if this is an invitation, I'm in.
Oh, dude, you will love this. I don't know if you saw on, like, what the hell was it on? American Pickers, they did the Octagon House.
Yeah, I actually saw that episode.
Yeah, that's Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, which the Octagon House is also haunted. But there's the one that they didn't talk about. Well, obviously, it's not a haunting show, but there's a house called the Pink House, which the tenants only last like 4 months in that house before they move out, and it's abandoned for like a year and a half until they convince somebody to move in. And the rent is dirt cheap because it's claimed as one of the most haunted houses in Wisconsin, the whole state.
I'd love to go in those places.
You feeling a tour?
Yeah, I am. By the way, did you go down to the rectory when Ursula went a few months ago?
No. Due to somebody who's going to remain nameless at the moment, but I believe that you know who I'm talking about. I have been blocked from her.
Okay.
due to hacking issues.
Right.
It, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, we've talked over text, but she didn't know that I wasn't seeing anything that she was doing. And she didn't know that, or I didn't know that she wasn't seeing anything that I was doing. So, we got that figured out, but anytime I try and become friends with her, it's a harassment thing. To where I get put in Facebook jail, which is where I'm at right now for the next, like, probably 14 hours.
Oh, wow.
Like, but I've had to wait 2 weeks. So, yeah.
You missed it. The rectory, you heard what Dave and I said about it. One thing, Dave and I disagree on a lot of things. But one thing we do agree on is the rectory is the most haunted place we've ever been to. It's an evil feeling place. You've heard what Ursula said about it. She is telling people not to go there. You don't
really
go there unless you know what you're doing. Because the first time I investigated the place, I did not feel right for 2 or 3 weeks. Frank Heiberger did not feel right for 2 or 3 weeks. The two feelers that went down with Edward Shanahan did not go to any of his events and had to cancel out for 2 or 3 of his little power circles for several weeks after that because they were not right. Frank lost his girlfriend because she went with him, and neither one of them were right for several weeks. And they ended up splitting up and not even speaking to each other now. It's not for the lighthearted or the ones who can't block quickly. Ursula, unfortunately, is one of those. She has trouble blocking things and gets affected. And that's just not a place for somebody like her.
See, all right, personally, and we don't, before it's going to cut us off and we got to hang up, it'll hang us up, I should say.
Right, so I guess we better go out and get off before that happens.
Well, we got looks like 3 minutes now.
Okay.
Maybe. It may last longer. I don't know.
All right, well, let's not chance it. We can talk another time.
So.
But
yeah.
Frank is going down to the rectory in September. It's going to be for a 2-night investigation. And yes, he did pay out $900-some-odd to reserve the place.
Wow.
For a weekend. So I'm going. He's renting a camper. So Anna, some other people from his team, and I are going down there with probably 2 or 3 others and investigate the place over a weekend with the camper parked on the grounds next to the rectory.
Hmm. That should be interesting.
It's going to be very interesting, especially if I try to open myself up like I had before and a walk on the other side. I did not tell you over the radio, but the way that I heard Al Capone mentioned at Ethel's was before I ever investigated the place. Nobody had investigated the place after it's closed. Nobody had ever done that until Midnight Paranormal got in there, and that was me who got them in there. But I walked in there about a week before the investigation. After they closed, I was in my bed, and I appeared in front of the door, walked through the door, walked into the main part of the bar, and there were about 20, 25 spirits there, all gathered around the center tables, where you will pick up a little bit of readings on that center table. That's where they were all gathered. And we spoke for a few minutes, and then they all faded away because the head spirit, and it's one that Beth said bullies everybody there, and that I'm theorizing is Bruno Rodi. And the only words I could comprehend from him was Al Capone. That's where I got Al Capone, and that's where I went on research. It took me about 3 months of digging to figure out what the Al Capone connection was, and I finally found it after one of the Coletta brothers died, and it was put in an obituary. I found it one of the Coletta brothers' obits.
Really?
Where Rhoda was buried, was a funeral, his funeral was at that place. But I actually heard Al Capone's name mentioned during an out-of-body experience. And I'm not crazy.